one full of the Rupert Murdochs in the world. It's really America's liberal voice, the Head On Radio Network, and networks like us. There are not that many of us that can still give the ideals, not just at election time, but year-round. So I had to end with that plug. Carol, call again another day. We'll have more time to talk, all right?
All right.
Bye. All right. This is Mark Levine. My time is up. See you next week. I'm signing off.
This is the Quality News Network. The Senate Democrats' latest attempt to force a withdrawal of U.S. troops in Iraq has failed by a vote of 52-47. Senators debated in an all-night session dismissed by Republicans as political theater on a bill which would have brought troops home by April 30th.
Has been recovered. The Pentagon announced Iraq's top al-Qaeda chief was arrested in Mosul earlier this month. Abu Shahib is said to be directly linked to Osama bin Laden. In London, Britain's parliament has been given a report saying there are not enough NATO troops in Afghanistan to both fight the Taliban and eradicate the region's poppy fields. In northwest Pakistan, near the Afghan border, gunmen ambushed a military convoy today, killing 16 Pakistani soldiers. In the wake of the Gaza takeover last month by Hamas Islamists, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas says he'll order early elections. The ousted leader announced his plan in a speech in Ramallah in the West Bank today. Unless he orders early elections, they would not be held until 2010. A former aide to Vice President Dick Cheney is sentenced to 10 years in prison for spying. Last year, Leonardo Argoncio pleaded guilty to taking sensitive documents and faxing them to the Philippines. That's where they were used to try to force that country's president out of office. The wife of murdered Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl is suing the terrorists responsible for killing her husband. Marianne Pearl filed the suit in a New York court. She's seeking an unspecified amount of money from Pakistan's largest bank and 23 individuals. An Indian court has sentenced three people to death for their role in the 1993 bombings in Mumbai. Those bombings killed 123 and wounded more than 700. In Japan, an earthquake-damaged nuclear power plant has been ordered shut down for repairs. It's the world's largest such facility. Company officials say the leak of radioactive materials into the Sea of Japan on Monday was far larger than originally reported. You are listening to Quality News Network.
Looking to find the best in the USA? Come to Boulevards.com. We're the best address in city guides across the U.S. For the best information in travel, Boulevards.com gives you the most up-to-date choices for the best in dining, hotels, entertainment, adventure, and exciting tips to make your holiday the best it can be. Whether you're a local or just looking for great getaway tips, go to Boulevards.com and get the best. Be independent of search engines. Make your choices. We're Boulevards.com. Come visit us at SanFrancisco.com, SanJose.com, Carmel.com, WashingtonDC.com, PaloAlto.com, Seattle.com, Oakland.com, SanAntonio.com, Denver.com, and many more. We are Boulevards.com, the best in your visiting the USA. Come visit us at Boulevards.com.
A study released today says that a mega flood that occurred 400,000 years ago is what separated Britain from France. The flood that released 35 million cubic feet of water per second occurred during a glacial period and was followed by rising water levels. Those created the English Channel. Archaeologists are urging Jordanian officials to put the brakes on tourist development near the ancient ruins of Petra. Petra was recently named one of the seven wonders of the world. If protective measures aren't taken immediately, the site may sustain significant damage. A diet favoring fresh fruits and vegetables does not appear to prevent the return of breast cancer. That's the findings of a long-term medical study just released. China has adopted a law designed to restrict the length of time teenagers spend playing games online. Those under 18 must use their IDs when signing on to games. If teens play more than 3 hours, the points earned in competition begin to diminish. The Dow Jones Board of Directors has approved the sale to Rupert Murdoch. The $5 billion deal must now be approved by the Bancroft family, the Dow's controlling shareholders. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $75.05 a barrel on the New York Mercantile. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was down 53 points at 13,918. The NASDAQ finished up 13 and the S&P was down 3. There's more on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are, 6 minutes after the hour, midweek. And lots of stuff to go into this evening, but more than anything else, it's Wednesday, and you know what that means.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
Darn straight, it's prayer meeting. Agnes may be a little Osley on the Audrey, but it is prayer meeting. And we've got plenty of stuff to go into with regard to the excesses of the religion industry. First and foremost, there was an action alert that came out earlier today from the freaks at the American Family Association. They're going to take away your First Amendment right to hate the homosexuals if the hate crimes bill passes. You know, the funniest part of the hate crimes bill is that if it stands as it does, and you go up and you ball bat a freak like Donald Wildman, you can be prosecuted for a hate crime. However, if Donald Wildman goes up and ball bats a gay guy, he can't be. And it's Donald Wildman who's preaching all the hate all the time. And Dobson and Falwell's getting his just dessert. Turn the spit again, boys. He ain't done enough. Pat Robertson and that whole filthy crew, they can go on and hate to their heart's content. And George Bush says he'll veto the bill anyway, so why should we pass it? We should pass it because it's time for the Democratic Party to stand up and say that American citizenship and the constitutional rights conveyed thereby apply to all American citizens. That's why. Fairly simple. But then again, a lot of the issues we talk about on this program would seem simple. It's the people who try to complicate the simple issues that are who are causing the problem. What's wrong with a law that says you can't beat the stuffing out of somebody based on how you think they have sex? Or you can't beat the stuffing out of somebody based on which invisible thing they believe in? Or that you can't beat the stuffing out of somebody because of the color of their skin, or what country they or their ancestors came from. Seems like it's all one thing to me, but meanwhile the religion industry likes the part about, you know, well, they don't like it, but they tolerate the part about color of skin or national origin, and they darn sure want to be protected from people who would say, oh, wait a minute, you're one of those evil freaks, I think I'll stomp the guts out of you. Nah, they don't want that. They want to be protected when it comes to that. But they don't. But they say your rights to preach hate in the pulpit, to preach 42nd flip floppy, and where it says, "Yea, verily, I preach unto you that you shall hang the homosexuals on barbed wire fences." That part they can't touch that. So I don't know. Somebody will have to help me. The Action Alert said that a vote might go down as early as today. Don't worry. The Republicans will filibuster it for you, Mr. Wildman, and on our side, we won't do a damn thing to stop it. We're not going to have another one of those 30-hour sessions over something as inconsequential as an American's right to go on being an American as opposed to a dead American because some right-wing punk didn't like, how sex was had. Jeez. Speaking of how sex was had, if you were paying attention, you might have noticed that Larry Flint now says he's got a list of about 30 members of government that he's ready to drop the dime on, and they're in the process of making a decision whether to release a list of 30 or release them one at a time. Mr. Flint, I vote for one at a time. Because if you release all 30 at once, it'll be lost in whatever, I don't know, a dog will bite Paris Hilton, or maybe her chihuahua will get rabid, or be caught on camera with the monkey or whatever. But no, one at a time, please, Mr. Flint. One at a time. Drip, drip, drip. Do you agree? You think? I don't want to see all these Republicans walk out of the Congress en masse. I want to see them on camera one at a time, just like David Vitter, whose wife, by the way, turned out to be all bark and no bite, because they had a little press conference a couple of days ago. We would have talked about it last night on the air had I been on the air last night. But there was a David Vitter press conference in which he said, "And my wife has forgiven me." And she said, lo and behold, that she had. Hey, Mrs. Vitter, what happened to all that business about how you were a hard ass and you were gonna pull a Lorena Bobbitt on him? Just another Republican liar. Just another Republican liar. I was terribly, terribly proud to see what Harry Reid did in the Senate with the 30-hour marathon of making the Republicans stand up and face the nation with is that trademarked? Face the nation, making them own up to their disdain for our soldiers, making them own up to the fact that they will carry water for George Bush until there's no water left to carry. I'm sure you heard some of the sickening sound bites of things like, this is just cheap political theater. Well, if that's the case, sir, and I think that was John Cornyn, wasn't it? That goober from Texas. This is just cheap political theater. Well, I guess that makes what the soldiers are doing in Iraq cheap military theater then, doesn't it, Senator? Doesn't it? In your eyes, because, of course, they're not real. Those soldiers over there, they are they're in place to advance your political agenda, because being a Republican senator, you love your party more than you love your nation, and you know it, don't you? Of course you do. A couple of other things right from the top of the list this evening. I'm hoping here in a couple of minutes we'll be having a telephone conversation. Now, speaking of telephones, by the way, it all works again. Every last number, the whole six-line system, is working again. So if you want to reach the program, let's re-examine what or go back to the way we previously were. If you need us to pay for the call, it's 877-443-2366, 877-4, head on. And if you want to make the call on your own dime, it's 304-658-5453. Easy enough. And we are thrilled to pieces to have everything back in place. And it's because of you. It is entirely because of you that we're able to have this all back, because we got our repaired phone system back. just yesterday, and I was able to get it reinstalled earlier today, and it works, and we're ever so happy, and we are so grateful to you for making it happen via your donations there at the button at headonradionetwork.com. Now, what I was saying, though, is that I hope we'll be having a conversation here in a couple of minutes with a man named Ellis Turnage. Mr. Turnage is a lawyer who practices largely in federal court in Mississippi, and he had this idea that maybe it would be a good idea for Democrats to vote in Democratic primaries and for Republicans to vote in Republican primaries, and it is causing an absolute hissy in Mississippi, this novel notion of people belonging to parties actually voting in their own daggum primaries, because a federal judge said, you know, not a bad idea. The federal judge also required photo IDs for voting, too, something with which Mr. Turnage apparently disagrees. We'll find out for sure here in a couple of minutes. We're going to try to get him on the phone and talk about this a little bit, because I've never understood the way that the South goes about having primaries. What? You're a Republican and you want to vote in the Democratic primary? Well, come on over. Vote twice, buddy! It always seemed to me that if you're a member of a political party, you're that, and if you're an independent, you don't get to vote in either one. It just makes sense. Otherwise, why belong to the party? So that's coming up. We'll take a break right now. And when we come back, hopefully our conversation with Mr. Ellis Turnage. That and many other things coming up this evening. This is America's progressive voice. This is The Horn, the Head-On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at headonradionetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
Headonradionetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to The Horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at headonradionetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
If you missed Strictly Confidential last week, you missed Gay Fashion Tips.
So I'm sitting here in my Florida State University t-shirt and my pajama bottoms.
You missed what gay DJs named their dogs.
Disco and Boogie are their names.
You missed lesbian Bible study.
And that's my favorite line, too, out of the Bible, like, thou shalt not lie with a man, so I don't, so what's up with that?
You missed Kiss and Tell.
And this big, tall, handsome Air Force sergeant bent down and kissed me, and I didn't wash my lips for weeks.
You missed The Pursuit of Happiness.
Are you attached, Mark?
Well, see, now this is Strictly Confidential, isn't it?
Tune in Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern for Strictly Confidential, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered conversation radio, exclusively on the Head On Radio Network. You know you want to.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, Don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to IRS.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's IRS.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484.
Twenty minutes past the hour, we're back on Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. I'm also awfully glad to have you along for this evening's edition. And we're joined on the phones right now, as I mentioned earlier, by a lawyer from Cleveland, Mississippi, a federal court practitioner, very much interested in federal issues, civil rights issues, voting rights issues, Ellis Turnage. Mr. Turnage, are you there?
I am. How are you, Bob?
I'm very well, sir. Very well. Thank you for taking time to talk to us. You and I talked a little bit before the program. I called you because I saw this article in the New York Times about the issues of what happens in primaries in Mississippi. You have won your case in the federal court there to the extent that Democrats are going to have to vote in Democratic primaries and Republicans in Republican primaries and independents or whatever somewhere else, right?
Well, yeah, that's true. Or either of the political parties will have the right to allow independents to vote in their primaries if they so choose to do so.
Okay. Let me ask you first, sir, what motivated your getting involved in this issue?
Well, some of my friends that was in law school with me serve on the state executive committee, and they also serve on some of the local county executive committees, and it has been a well-orchestrated effort by Republicans to influence the outcome of local Democratic Party primary election.
Okay, so do when Republicans or I don't know, what do we call the moderate Democrat? What do you call somebody who will vote in a primary and then vote the complete other way in a federal election for say president? I don't know what to call it. Democrats, Republicans, mugwumps. I don't know. How much impact was that having on the primary process in Mississippi?
Well, it was having a great deal in some areas. Obviously, the demographics of each local jurisdiction, you know, have to be taken into account. But I'll give you a scenario in Washington County. Greenville is the county seat. They had a Republican primary going on in August, the first Tuesday in August of 2003, and the Republicans placed ads in the local newspaper telling Republican voters not to vote in the Republican primary for governor. They needed to come over and vote in the local sheriff, chancellor clerk, and tax assessor race.
So that they could impact, local county politics?
Exactly.
Huh.
Exactly.
This just blows my mind, Mr. Turnage.
Well, but it's factually true. The same scenario happened in Noxubee County, where that most of the local elections are decided in the Democratic primary election. But then in November, the Republican precinct would always vote Republican in the general election. So the Democrats could never get any participation from these Republican voters in the Republican precinct, and they decided that they wanted to change state law, which, by the way, was passed in 1902.
Oh, that's got to be a dandy law going back that far. I can well imagine other things that were passed in Mississippi in 1902 at the same time.
Well, at that time, African Americans were not voters.
Yeah, that's true.
So at that time, the the white vote in Mississippi was all Democratic. They were still mad with the Republicans and Lincoln for freeing the slaves in 1865. So basically, they were homogenous, all-white, Democratic primary, and after the passage of the Voting Rights Act in 1965, you can kind of see how the politics began to change, and at that point in time, most white voters in Mississippi chose to start affiliating with the Republican Party.
So the article, as I read it, Mr. Turnage, there are other people quoted who say, oh my goodness, this will leave the Democratic Party as a shell of its former self. It'll be weakened. All the white people are going to go vote register Republican now. Do you really think that that's going to be the outcome?
Nah. Now, we have a Republican governor. We have two Republican senators from Mississippi, U.S. senators. And we have four United States congressmen from Mississippi, two of whom are Democrats and two of whom are Republicans. I'm not really, you know, hung up on party politics. And again, I'm not a party politician. I was consulted because of my legal skill. And I can't tell you, and I can't predict with any degree of accuracy what the fallout may be for the future about this. I was asked to look at this case based on a U.S. Supreme Court case written by Judge Anthony Scalia in 2000 out of California that held the exact same thing. So the law was very clear that the state of Mississippi or any other state cannot dictate to a political party how it handles its primary election. That was the whole basis of it. It's based under the First Amendment right to association. People who share the same ideas, the same goals, and the same beliefs coalesce together to achieve certain political objectives.
So does that mean that this could be politically thwarted then through the executive committee, say, of the Democratic Party? They could, the Democratic Party could say that they'll allow Republicans to vote in their primaries and this is all for naught?
No. I think that the state executive committee for the Democrats have made their mind up that they didn't want Republicans voting in their primary elections, and these Republican precincts would turn around in the general election and vote heavily Republican.
Okay.
So you're talking about primary elections are designed to settle intra-party feuds.
Sure, and to select a nominee, a single nominee for a single office to stand in the general.
That represents the ideas and the goals of that particular party.
Mm-hmm.
So now if you have Republicans coming over diluting the voting strength of the Democrats, and every Republican that votes in a Democratic primary cancels out and minimize the ideals and the goals of the Democratic Party.
Well, and that's it seems strange to me, Mr. Turnage, because why shouldn't under that scenario, why wouldn't Republicans come over and try to influence the election to select as the nominee what they perceive to be the weakest candidate and thereby foul the entire process and for the general? I mean, that's what was going on, wasn't it?
Right, that's party rating. Yeah, that's exactly the concept, party rating. And that shouldn't happen. If you're a Republican voter, you should be choosing the Republican nominee that best represents the parties of the and the beliefs and ideals of the Republican Party. And in the general election, the Democratic candidate, chosen by the Democrats, proceeds to the general election ballot. And the Republican nominee, chosen by the Republican voters, choose their nominee, and they meet in the election in November, and the best person wins.
It seems downright democratic to me, Mr. Turnage. Let me ask you this. There was another effect of this ruling regarding voting voter IDs at the polls that requires a photo ID. Do I have that correct?
That is what the federal court ordered.
Will you forgive me if I say that that troubles me greatly?
Well, not really. There are a lot of people that believe that that this is a new law, and of course Mississippi is a state that's covered by the Voting Rights Act, and before any new law or any change in an existing law that pertains to voting can become effective, it must be pre-cleared by the United States Attorney General in Washington under Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. So we still have a long way to go with this case. These cases have a tendency of lasting in court for years, sometimes decades.
Okay.
So it's not over. It's going to be a lot more legal maneuvering and appeals arising from this decision. But as a basic principle, I think the Court of Appeal, the Fifth Circuit, is going to rule, and the Supreme Court will ultimately uphold that the political party has a right to determine who can vote in its own party, because you have to be a member of the party. If you're not a member, then you don't have a right to participate.
As far as these IDs are concerned, Mr. Turnage, is there a fear of it being used as a, and you mentioned the Voting Rights Act and being under the supervision of the Attorney General, is there a fear that that those IDs could be used as a means of disenfranchisement?
Well, not only that. I think that if you're going to require re-registration of voters, then hypothetically speaking, it could cause a disproportionate number of poor and low-income voters not to re-register, only to find out on election day they can't vote now because they didn't re-register. The ID, I'm not really sure how that's going to play out. I have not done a lot of research on that.
Mm-hmm.
My lawsuit on behalf of the Democratic Party in Mississippi did not request voter ID as a remedy in this case, and I don't believe that it's required in this case, and I think that the law from the United States Supreme Court is quite clear that it's up to the state legislature, and once it gets to the state legislature, I think that with the House being under Democratic control, that there will be some negotiations about this voter ID and what's required and whether or not it has to be a photo ID and what types of voter ID will be required and whether or not voters who lack an ID will be allowed to vote will be negotiated and discussed.
Now, you mentioned that you've got a split in your House delegation in the Congress, and you've got two Republican senators. You've got a Republican governor, not that far back that you had a Democratic governor down in Mississippi. But in the state house itself, the house is rather plainly controlled by the Democratic Party and just a narrow majority on the part of the Republicans in the state senate. Do you foresee or are there rumblings that balance will be upset by this ruling?
Well, it's hard to predict any degree of accuracy about what the future holds about any of this. From 1865 until 1991, Democrats won every governor election in Mississippi. So this is a realignment that's going on in the South, and we realize that. Elections in Mississippi have been very politically, racially polarized based on race or partisanship. What I believe is going to occur is that statewide, with the African American vote being about 30 to 32% on election day, obviously the 68% white voters have the right to control state elections. The majority wins under our election system, even though it may be racially polarized. So you got to look, once you get past the statewide elections and you get down into the local races, and you got to kind of look to the demographics of each political jurisdiction and whoever's in the majority. I can't imagine the people who are in the majority controlling what the outcome of the election.
Now, you mentioned the demographic split in the vote there, Mr. Turnage. And I realize you're not part of the executive committee. But is part of this a desire to address issues that are more, say, working class or middle class oriented, as opposed to, say, the divisive issues that have been used to such great effect in the South in recent years?
Well, I'm not a political scientist. I'm really not. And I can't tell you what the future holds. You got an awful lot of low income to moderate income white voters. These voters, usually based on a subtle racial appeal in elections, in the last election, 85% of the white voters coalesced around the Republican candidate. So if that's any indication, say why. But once you get down into the county jurisdiction and to the municipal jurisdiction, the demographics are a lot different. You have 22 majority black African American precincts.
Okay, so
I'm 82.
I would imagine that the issues And I'm talking about, you know, workers' issues. I'm talking about wage issues, health care issues, things that so-called conservative politics has not addressed, as compared to the fact that, you know, it's been, you know, God, gays, and guns coming out of the so-called conservative right for so many years. Do you get a sense, and I realize you're not a political scientist or a sociologist, but is there a sense in the Democratic Party in Mississippi that they're ready to try to force conversations, discussions, debates about more issues that are more significant to middle and lower class Mississippians?
Absolutely. Most of the members of the Democratic Party are lower and moderate income. This ruling, is, in my view, will level the playing field. It's going to take away the power of these Republican bosses in certain areas of the state. Is going to reduce their influence, and I think it's going to level the playing field on the statewide, because what you have is the word that you were looking for earlier was ticket splitters.
Yeah,
they vote Democrat in the local races, which are decided in the primary. Then they turn around in the general election when it gets ready, when you decide the statewide candidates or the presidential election, they vote Republican. So, in my viewpoint, they are Republicans. If they are Republicans, they shouldn't be voting in the Democratic primary.
Hear to that, Mr. Turnage. We've spent a lot of time on this network, and we've probably spent more time on this network than any other national organization, talking about the recovery along the Mississippi Gulf Coast from Katrina. I'm just asking you outside kind of the topic itself. What's the demographic split in that area? What will this issue as far as re-registration do in terms of what is already a very chaotic situation along the Gulf Coast?
Well, the Gulf Coast is Congressional District 4. That's a heavy. That district has the largest percentage of white voters in the state, and a white Democrat controls that area and has for the last 10 or 12 years. I don't know that it's going to have any significant impact on that, but again, I'm not the person who would assess that. I was hired for my legal skills to put this case through federal court to enforce the party's First Amendment right to association under the First Amendment, and we prevailed on that issue. What the resulting fallouts will be, nobody can say. I mean, you could have hypotheses that go either way. The whites are going to leave the Democratic Party, but I don't believe that. I believe that there are some white voters who will remain Democrats, and you got to look at the demographics of the specific political jurisdiction that you're talking about to determine what's going to happen. DeSoto County near Memphis is a very Republican area, but it's also 85 to 90% white. If you flip that and reverse the demographics, then you're going to have very few Republicans to do anything. When you get back closer to 50%, those are the elections that will be affected, what I refer to as the outcome determinative district.
Okay. What kind of response are you getting from, say, some of the old line so-called moderate to conservative white Democrats? How are they taking all this?
I haven't talked to any of them. You know, I haven't read a lot of the op-eds about this. You've got advocates on both sides. You've got Democratic political op-ed writers. You've got Republican political op-ed writers who are saying the opposite thing. I don't think that anybody can really gauge. I've always thought that I've always had an independent streak in me. If I needed a road, I wanted to get the best road builder. I didn't care whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. I wanted the man with the best skill. And I think that's why they got me on this case, because I ran for the state legislature 20 years ago as an independent and lost by 113 votes. And I appeal to Republicans and Democrats. And I think that most people are going to vote for the person that has the best qualifications and the one that they're going to vote for the person, not so much the party. But again, the party has a right to define who can vote in a primary election, and you got to distinguish between a primary election and a general election.
Sure.
It's a
sure.
big difference.
Absolutely. And ultimately, it seems that the outcome of this is that you will actually have Democrats who represent Democratic Party ideals and Republicans who represent Republican Party ideals in the general election. Prior to this ruling, I don't think, and the same occurs in Alabama, places elsewhere. You don't necessarily know that you're getting the strongest or best Democrat or the strongest or best Republican in an election under that situation. Most now maybe states, you will.
Well, most states have most other states, the old Confederate states, they have open primaries. Cynthia McKinney blamed and faulted the Republicans for her defeat in 2006.
Because they came out and beat her in the primary.
Right. Georgia has an open primary system.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the southern states from the old Confederacy have a majority vote requirement to win a primary election. So it cuts both ways. Nobody knows what this means. The U.S. Supreme Court, and again, Justice Scalia is one of the most conservative members of the U.S. Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
And he authored the Jones versus California Democratic Party case. So this isn't some liberal scheme that has been cooked up. I don't think that anybody could call Justice Antonin Scalia to be a liberal.
No, we've called him lots of things on this program, but never a liberal, Mr. Turnage.
Well, he offered the Jones versus California Democratic Party case in 2000. That was 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this case was modeled based on Justice Scalia's teaching in that case. And I would tell you that recently in Virginia, the federal district court there struck down on behalf of the Republican Party an open primary election scheme. The point is very basic and it's very simple. It's the political party's right opposed to the state legislature's right to determine who can participate in a primary election.
And if it's within your knowledge, most of those open primary schemes through the old Confederacy are dictated by a function of state law, are they not?
They very much are, and I suspect that eventually they are going to get knocked down, and in due time we'll be able to tell what happened. It to me, it's kind of like the same thing with the school integration from the 60s. This is the political integration, and people say that it's going to cause white flight from the Democratic Party. I don't necessarily agree with that, but I can't tell you within a degree of accuracy what's going to happen. I think that what's going to happen is it's going to cause a leveling of the playing field in politics, and it's going to cause a true two-party system to emerge. I mean,
it'll actually make votes count for what votes are supposed to count for, won't it?
Well, I hope that. I really believe that it will, but again, I'm not a political scientist. I wasn't hired on this case to predict the outcome. I was hired on this case to end political party rating on behalf of Republicans in the Democratic primary.
So you are certain that this will go up. I mean, nobody's going to let this lie. It's going to go to the Fifth Circuit, and then it'll go on to the Supreme Court. You can look that far into your crystal ball.
I believe that it will, because the judge just this week, 2 days ago, granted intervention on behalf of the Mississippi Republican Party. Now, if the Republican Party was so satisfied with this, why would they be intervening? And also, you had the Mississippi State Conference of the NAACP intervening on behalf of the voter ID question and the re-registration question. So they have raised a lot of new issues in the case.
Well, Mr. Turnage, I thank you very much for your time, and I wish you the very best as you proceed through the case. I assume you'll remain counsel through the appeal process.
I don't know that I can't say that. If the state executive committee votes to appeal the ID question, I will handle the appeal.
Mm-hmm.
But if they vote to leave it alone, then you have other intervenors in the case who would be more than able to handle those questions on appeal to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeal.
Okay. Well, I hope as this can, I'll try to keep an eye on this case as it goes through. I'm very much interested to see what happens here, because I really think it does affect, you call it a level playing field. I think it affects the political climate of the entire Deep South. And if we actually had some elections where we knew that real Democrats were running against real Republicans, might be kind of interesting to see what happens down there.
Well, what was the only Senate race, the U.S. Senate race in 2006? That the Republicans was able to pull off in the Deep South? Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Against an African-American, Al Floyd, right?
Yep, exactly.
The only one. So nobody knows what this means. Politics, I believe that most people try to do the right thing but make the decision that's going to be best for the area. But, you know, when you get racial appeals in the campaign, And we've had a lot of that in Mississippi, and politics have been based racially polarized for too long. But again, you have that minority on both sides that trying to do the right thing. So maybe this might speed up the day where that when Justice Harlan said in 1896 in the Plessy versus Ferguson case that America politics should really be in every way of social life should be colorblind. Maybe we'll speed up that day.
I'm behind you 100% on that, Mr. Turnage. And I thank you very much for your time this evening. I know how busy you are.
All right. Good talking to you.
You take care now.
All right.
Bye now. Ellis Turnage, counsel for the Mississippi State Democratic Executive Committee, in its attempt to actually make elections be primary elections, be a genuine nominating process for the principles of the party in question. And that's one of the things I learned out of looking at this story is that, in fact, it is dictated in southern states by the state legislature, these so-called open primaries. And I don't, I grew up with that kind of thing in Alabama, and with my father having moved to Alabama from West Virginia, he stood in stunned amazement when he walked into his first primary and they asked him, well, which primary you want to vote in? He said, I'm a Democrat. What do you reckon? And they said, you can vote in any one. And he just kind of stood there and scratched his head and said, well, I'll be damned. And talked about it till the day he died. The most bass-ackwards, upside-down way of trying to run a nominating process that he'd ever heard of. And it is. And here in West Virginia, from time to time, you'll get the state executive, and here in this state, it is up to the state executive committees. The Republicans have chosen to let independents vote in their primary. Fine, you know, they're Republicans. They do things like that. The Democrats of late have considered letting independents vote in their primary. For all I know, they've decided to, and I missed the story. I hope not. Seems to me that if you're going to align yourself with a political party, you ought to be able to only vote in the primary of that political party. And if you're an independent, you have no business participating in the nominating process, because that is a party event, a party activity. You're an independent. You're above it all. I don't vote for the party. I vote for the best person. Fine. Then you get to wait till November, and you get to vote for the best person. I don't like independents. I know that may seem kind of harsh, but really it's political cowardice is what it is. Stand up and be counted. Now, I'm a Democrat. I'm an old-fashioned Democrat. I'm an FDR Democrat, a JFK Democrat, and I believe in working within my party to make it better. And I will be the first to acknowledge that my party has a bunch of problems. Here in West Virginia, we got a problem called coal, such that coal controls the Republican Party, and it controls the Democratic Party in this state. It can be the same in other places. Maybe it's oil and gas in Louisiana. You know, but I don't want. I want to fix the problems in our party, not let Republicans cross over and make our problems worse. Let's talk to Wayne for a minute. Hey, Wayne, welcome to the program.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Good. I hate to break it to you, pal. But,
we did it, didn't we?
As of the next primary, independents can vote in the Democratic primary.
What a bunch of crap!
Right.
In the court
committee, decided that they've been studying it for 110 years or something. But.
Well, I had a feeling that I'd let it slip by me because, quite frankly, I don't pay nearly as much attention to West Virginia news and local party politics as I used to since this thing got the reach that it did. I tend to look at more national and global issues. I knew it was on the way, and I'd talked to a couple of committee members a couple of times, and I said, are you people insane? No, we need to be inclusive.
Well, to be honest with you, I really don't know what happened because I don't know what it was. A couple, 3 years ago, I was on the committee to study this. And, you know, I went to a few meetings, and you know how, you know, our meetings go. You live in Beckley and the meetings in Morgantown or Parkersburg or, you know. And after three meetings, I said, you know, this is a done deal. This will never happen. And apparently they moved on, and it did. So.
Well, I got the idea that there were some very powerful people. When last I looked at the issue, there were some very powerful people who wanted this to happen. And I to this day, I don't get it. This means that all you've got to, because, Wayne, is it just me, or most independents tend to be pissed off Republicans. I mean, have you experienced that?
Yeah.
So what we're doing is inviting Republicans to come in and pollute the nominating process for the Democratic Party.
Well, that's the way I feel, but, you know, what can I say? There were a lot of people, and Democratic people in predominantly Republican counties that felt that this could give them, you know, by letting the independents vote, that this could give them a better chance. But, you know, if you remember a couple years ago, I mean, the big, where was it, Parkersburg or... I forget where it was, but, you know, the big thing was to go change your registration from Republican to Democrat, vote in a primary. After you were done, go change your registration back to Republican. And they did that to eliminate, well, they did that, to, you know, with Warren McGraw.
Yes, they did.
You know, so.
And now we've just taken one little inconvenient step out of it for the Republicans.
Yeah. You don't have to switch. You could just be, well, you could be an independent, and then you could, you know, come and mess with our primary and get the guy in there that you know is going to lose and then vote against him in the, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, when I think about, well, you know, you live in a place where, how many members of the House of Delegates do you vote for? Five?
Five.
Yeah. This is really going to squirrel that up.
Yeah, it is. Yes, it is. And, you know, coming, I mean, this primary, I mean, my God, we're going to have more candidates than you could shake a stick at, buddy.
Yeah. Probably not a bad... I want people in the process. This isn't a West Virginia issue versus somewhere else. I've got this little bee under my bonnet, burr under my saddle, about progressives getting serious about the process and running in primaries, because we're not going to do any good waiting and hoping we're going to change somebody's attitude in the general election, because it's always going to be a choice between quite frequently the lesser of two evils.
Right. Well, you know, and your guest alluded to it, and it's been a case here for many years in a lot of districts and a lot of counties. The primary election is the election.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. You know. And, but we'll have to see what happens. I don't know.
Well, I had a feeling as soon as I said that it had already happened. I don't know. Maybe it was back in the back of my brain on a cell that was, you know, hanging on for dear life or something.
You knew it. You just didn't want to admit it.
Yeah, that's probably what it was. So, you know, now I know that when I go to vote in my primary, there's every chance that some mugwump Republican is going to be out there desperately trying to water down my vote so he can holler about, you know, somebody's going to get his Bible or his mama's Bible or his mama's Bible's gay or,
right,
you know, the things that Republicans do.
Well, you know, and I mean, you know, the argument is, you know, that, you know, the Republican primary has been open for hell, I don't know how many years. You know,
that's because there weren't any Republicans.
Pardon me?
That's because there weren't any Republicans.
Right. That's exactly right. You know,
it looked bad for the party to have their nominee but win by 15 to 12.
Well, I'll be anxious to see how many of them run this time because of the ass-kicking they took last time. You know, with Mr. Blankenship and all his $3 or $4 million and, you know, that he was going to... Well, I think he was going to reverse the majority in the Senate. And, you know...
And he was going after the House, too.
Oh, yeah, and he was going to gain, you know, I don't know.
I'm glad he doesn't have that $4 million anymore, and I'm glad it didn't do him any good.
Right, well, I'm trying to think. How'd that work out? I mean, I know he didn't win any, but I think we gained...
Yeah, some that he backed lost precisely because he backed him.
Yeah, I mean, he won. I think we gained how many? We gained so many in the house. We gained in both houses.
Yeah,
the Senate and the House. You know, that was, you know. See, he could now. Had he spent that money on building a new school for the kids down at Marsh Fork, which he could easily have done, you know, all people might think a little differently of him.
That's true.
Have you ever seen Don Blankenship?
Oh yeah, I've been within smelling distance of him.
Do you remember Jackie Gleason?
Yeah.
Used to do Reginald Van.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And the guy with the mole on. Doesn't that look like Blankenship?
Oh my God, that's. We've come up with a million different images for him, but that's the first time that
was. What was his name? Reginald Van somebody?
Oh, I can't remember. Somebody in the chat room will have it in a matter of seconds. But, yeah, that big old mole.
Yeah. That's Don Blankenship.
Yeah, it is. Of course, I saw a T-shirt last night that was just beautiful. Somebody had done a beautiful Photoshop job of putting Don Blankenship's face on a pig.
Last night was a very nice event. That's a
yeah. I haven't gotten around to talking about it, but it was really
that's
exciting.
That's a very honorable man right there.
Yeah,
that was.
Yeah.
Very
what?
Nice. Listen, man. I gotta figure out something here for dinner and stuff. But I would like to personally thank all the people that have contributed to the network. They are the reason that we got our numbers back.
Yeah.
And I think that's wonderful, and
it's just thrilling to have a working phone system, Wayne.
Yes,
can tell
it
you.
Is, and you know that. I'm not going to.
Yeah, it was Reginald Van Gleason.
Him, but it would have been harder without him. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, darn near impossible.
Darn near.
And yeah, it was Reginald Van Gleason. That's.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we'll just start referring to Don now as Reggie.
Yeah, Reginald Van Blankenship.
So.
Oh, what an awful, awful human being. I hear pizza's great for dinner, dude.
You hear what?
I hear pizza's great for dinner.
Yeah, well, we're going to have, but we got a little leftover pizza and some grilled cheese with tomato. And, you know.
Oh, fresh tomato? Can't beat it.
Yeah, it'll suffice, man.
Yeah, it will. Yeah, it will. Good talking to you, man.
Okay, pal.
Later.
Have a good one.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Now, what Wayne said is so true. This thing is back. It's repaired. It's working like it's supposed to work. And it would not be doing so without you guys. The downside of that, every month is going to be that story. It doesn't work without you guys. We're just at that place. Now, for my part, I've done my part. You may have heard a few nights ago when Joe Vecchio called in, our good buddy from the morning, and he mentioned this contest that's being run through Yearly Coast Blog Pack Infrastructure. Well, they're giving away, I think, four awards of up to $5,000. And it was kind of an essay contest. So I wrote my essay about what we're doing here at the Head On Radio Network, because the question was, how can you build progressive infrastructure? And frankly, I'm not trying to be a smart aleck or anything, but how could there be anybody out there who's doing more to try to build progressive infrastructure than what's going on here at the Horn? Because, you know, I read blogs and so forth, and blogs certainly have a place, and there's some great journalism going on out there through blogs. But there is someday, because, you know, blogging is still relatively fresh and new. I don't know if it's old enough to be subjected to this yet, but someday somebody is going to do a study of blogging. And beyond the first post, you're going to see what really, really happens inside blogs themselves. And I'm not gooning on them. It's just that they are an initial delivery of information system, and what happens afterward is mostly me. At least the ones I read. Because you see the first post, somebody responds to it, and everybody's responding to the first post, and there's no dialogue and there's no discussion going on. Very seldom. So I don't see how you build a lot of infrastructure that way. On the other hand, if you've got somebody in Washington State and somebody in Florida and somebody in New York and somebody in Vermont and somebody in Wisconsin and somebody in Tennessee and somebody in Mississippi, all these places that we have been told are absolutely different from one another and have nothing in common, and they come together and they hear each other's voices and they realize that they have everything in common and almost nothing in difference. then looky, looky what you've done. Why, you've built infrastructure because you have connected people. I'm proud of what we do here at the Horn, but I'm not trying to let my ego get in the way of this when I ask, is there any other progressive organization out there that can say that they're doing anything remotely close to what we're doing here at the Horn and what you're helping to make happen here at the Horn? Anybody who wants to pick up a phone, anybody who wants to send an email, anybody who wants to participate in a chat room, anybody who wants to go to a message board, and I've been lax on the message boards, I'll get on those, can, and we'll dialogue, and we'll discuss, and sometimes we'll argue, and sometimes we'll disagree, but we will seek common ground, and we will seek a way forward, a way out of this mess, a way out of this nightmare. And we'll do it because of what you are helping to make happen here at the Horn. And no one, I swear to you, no one is doing anything like it. So, like I said, I'm doing my part. I've got the little essay in. I hope they'll pay attention to what's going on here and see how very important it is and be a part of taking it forward and building this groundswell of change and hope and the future itself. Time for the news. We'll be back afterwards. Talk a little bit about what happened last night down the Coal River Valley. This is America's Progressive Voice. This is The Horn. And I'm Bob.
Republicans blocked Senate Democrats' latest attempt to force a withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq. Despite an all-night debate, the plan failed by a vote of 52-47. Republicans called the entire political process political theater. The bill would have brought the troops home by April 30th. Rescuers searched the massive wreckage of Brazil's worst air disaster after an Airbus 320 skidded off a rainy runway last night in Sao Paulo. The jet slammed into a gas station and airport building, killing all 186 aboard, at least 15 people on the ground. The cockpit recorder has been recovered. The Pentagon announced Iraq's top al-Qaeda chief was arrested in Mosul earlier this month. Abu Shahib is said to be directly linked to Osama bin Laden. In London, Britain's Parliament has been given a report saying there are not enough NATO troops in Afghanistan to both fight the Taliban and eradicate the region's poppy fields. In northwest Pakistan, near the Afghan border, gunmen ambushed a military convoy today, killing 16 Pakistani soldiers. In the wake of the Gaza takeover last month by Hamas Islamists, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas says he'll order early elections. The ousted leader announced his plan in a speech in Ramallah in the West Bank today. Unless he orders early elections, they would not be held until 2010. A former aide to Vice President Dick Cheney is sentenced to 10 years in prison for spying. Last year, Leonardo Argoncio pleaded guilty to taking sensitive documents and faxing them to the Philippines. That's where they were used to try to force that country's president out of office. The wife of murdered Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl is suing the terrorists responsible for killing her husband. Marianne Pearl filed the suit in a New York court. She's seeking an unspecified amount of money from Pakistan's largest bank and 23 individuals. An Indian court has sentenced three people to death for their role in the 1993 bombings in Mumbai. Those bombings killed 123 and wounded more than 700. In Japan, an earthquake-damaged nuclear power plant has been ordered shut down for repairs. It's the world's largest such facility. Company officials say the leak of radioactive materials into the Sea of Japan on Monday was far larger than originally reported. You're listening to Quality News Network.
Looking to find the best in the USA? Come to Boulevards.com. We're the best address and city guides across the U.S. For the best information in travel, Boulevards.com gives you the most up-to-date choices for the best in dining, hotels, entertainment, adventure, and exciting tips to make your holiday the best it can be. Whether you're a local or just looking for great getaway tips, go to Boulevards.com and get the best. Be independent of search engines. Make your choices. We're Boulevards.com. Come visit us at SanFrancisco.com, SanJose.com, Carmel.com, WashingtonDC.com, PaloAlto.com, Seattle.com, Oakland.com, SanAntonio.com, Denver.com, and many more. We are Boulevards.com, the best in your visiting the USA. Come visit us at Boulevards.com.
A study released today says that a mega flood that occurred 400,000 years ago is what separated Britain from France. The flood that released 35 million cubic feet of water per second occurred during a glacial period and was followed by rising water levels. Those created the English Channel. Archaeologists are urging Jordanian officials to put the brakes on tourist development near the ancient ruins of Petra. Petra was recently named one of the seven wonders of the world. If protective measures aren't taken immediately, the site may sustain significant damage. A diet favoring fresh fruits and vegetables does not appear to prevent the return of breast cancer. That's the findings of a long-term medical study just released. And China has adopted a law designed to restrict the length of time teenagers spend playing games online. Those under 18 must use their IDs when signing on to games. If teens play more than 3 hours, the points earned in competition begin to diminish. The Dow Jones Board of Directors has approved the sale to Rupert Murdoch. The $5 billion deal must now be approved by the Bancroft family, the Dow's controlling shareholders. Light sweet crude is trading at $75.05 a barrel on the New York Mercantile. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was down 53 points at 13,918. The Nasdaq finished up 13, and the S&P was down 3. There's more on our website at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Christen.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Seven past the hour. Wednesday night, prayer meeting. We'll get to some prayer meeting stories later, I assure you. And we'll go straight to the phones right now. Scott is calling from Salem, Massachusetts. Hey, Scott, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Bob. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure.
You read an email we sent to you along with our donation, in quotes, to the Head-On Network.
Okay, yes.
And wanted to talk about this, the use of the language, whether something's a donation or whether we're going to take back the language that the economists have been using and talk really about the value that you're producing.
Well, thank you.
And how we want to pay for that, just like we pay for everything else. But I thought, we've been listening for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Love the show. Lots of things we can discuss, but my wife wanted me to call tonight with a sort of a prayer meeting related kind of topic.
Okay.
So, I'm an older guy, judging by the music you play. I would guess we're about the same age.
I'm 44.
That's just about right on, yeah.
Okay.
And I was...
Easy how you call that being an older guy, okay?
Well, you'll see why I call it being an older guy in a second.
Okay.
I had a career in science. I was doing work for the pharmaceutical industry. And I got disgusted with what was going on with our environment. So I decided to go back to law school. Now, when you go back to law school at 42, you are an older guy in the class. No,
okay,
right.
All right, yeah, yeah.
Right. So I've just finished up, and I'm in the process of studying for the bar exam.
Oh, what joy.
Yeah, what joy. It comes up next week, actually. on Wednesday.
So how many days is it in Massachusetts?
It's 2 days.
Ugh.
Wednesday is multiple choice all day. Tuesday's essays all day.
Oh.
Thursday, I'm sorry, is essays all day.
Yeah, and the multiple choice part, I think I divided it out one time, and it comes out to you've got something like 35 seconds per question.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, it's an obscene thing. But I was studying. You know, you go to one of these bar prep courses, which is a racket in its own. It's quite fascinating. Everyone does it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting in there in the class, and I'm putting all this stuff in my brain. And one of the lecturers said something I thought was really interesting. Quoted this case called Woolley versus Maynard. And this is the case about the guy in New Hampshire who covered up the phrase live free or die on his license plate. And he was tried by the state for defacing his license plate.
Mm-hmm.
And the Supreme Court said that since live free or die is just a slogan, it doesn't have anything to do with identifying the car, the year of registration, or its license number, that the government couldn't compel this person to make that speech if the person didn't want to make it. And I thought to myself, okay, I've just learned the first useful thing from this bar review class. Because I thought to myself, you know, it's always annoyed me that the words, in God we trust, is printed on all of my money.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been Supreme Court cases that say, and this sort of defies reason, that that's a secular slogan. That the word, in God we trust, is a secular slogan.
You're right. I hadn't thought of it, but you're absolutely correct.
It doesn't pass the laugh test, right? But, of course, that's the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court says it's okay for the government to put it on there in the same way that it's okay for the government to have prayers at the beginning of Congress, of sessions of Congress.
Yeah, it's kind of harmless.
Yeah, harmless, tradition, it goes way back, let's not rock the boat, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing that says that I have to have that secular slogan on my money. So what I've been doing is I've been taking a Sharpie and I've been crossing out the words in God we trust on my bills. And I would encourage your listeners to just try it because it feels very subversive. And I did, you know, I thought this was, you know, oh, wow, this is a great idea.
It feels subversive, and it feels kind of liberating. And
exactly. And I thought, you know, wow, this could be a movement, right? And, of
mm-hmm.
course, you go on the Internet, and you find out that people have been doing this for a long time, right?
Right.
But there's been a strain on the Internet. A bunch of the atheist sites were talking about this. And they came to the conclusion, I think incorrectly, that deleting that phrase from your money was defacing the money.
Well, I mean, there's a statute out there, a federal statute, you're probably all already aware of it, Scott, that has to do with defacing the currency. There's another one that would probably apply to a whole lot more Americans called removing money from circulation.
Mm.
And all those people sitting there with the, you know, like the giant Corona bottles, the giant plastic Coke bottle or Corona bottle or whatever, that's a bank, and it's, you know, full of pennies. Those people are ostensibly committing a crime because they've removed those pennies from circulation.
Well, I on the website, I saw that statute, not the one about removing it, but the one about defacing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because, you know, the folks were saying, oh, geez, I don't know, I'm a little nervous, this might be violating the statute and so forth. But when you read the statute, what it says is you're not allowed to post a notice or a bill on the money. You're not allowed to advertise. So, you know, you've probably seen money. I don't know if you have. It says, check out www.yourspace.com or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's actually illegal because that's advertising. That's posting a notice on the current. That's illegal. But crossing out a secular slogan, something that has nothing to do with validating the legitimacy of the bill, you're not adding an extra zero to make a 10 into 100. You know? You're not.
Though God knows I'm frequently tempted.
Well, you know, you get the right color markers, you know, you have enough time, maybe you could do that. But I think it's actually kind of fun, you know, and I'm waiting. I share this with you and the listeners because I'm waiting for the time when someone gives me a bill with those words crossed out on it.
And you'll know that it's making its circle.
Exactly.
And, you know, it would be, it would be unprosecutable because unless Agent Fred bangs down your door at the very instant when you've got the Sharpie poised over the bill, how can they tell?
Well, I mean, the other thing is, it's always interesting to give someone one of these bills because I'm waiting for someone to say, what the heck is this? What did you do to this money, you know? Of course, no one has because no one really pays that much attention. But that's the other point is, you know, if someone were to say, I won't take this money, you know, and there might be people who would be, committed enough to the secular slogan, In God We Trust, that they would say, no, I'm not taking it. And then it will get interesting.
Because this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private.
Precisely.
That is a far more serious statement than In God We Trust.
Yeah, I will remember, right? I mean, that's what you have no choice but to take it. And the government doesn't have a right to compel me to make the speech. I choose not to. In the same way that I can put black electrical tape over the words Live Free or Die on my license plate.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
Well, I've got a new hobby now, Scott.
I find that the sort of medium point blue Sharpies work extremely well. You can do the whole thing in one swipe of the pen. It doesn't take any time, you know. Actually, it looks good, you know.
If you do it over like a stack of 100 ones, you know, the Sharpies don't get you all, you know, high and stuff. So.
Exactly. You got to choose up like a highlighter or something. I don't want a highlighter, I guess.
But that's a wonderful idea. I've been Agent Fred listens every night, so if they're going to get me, they're not going to get me on this one. I've been known to sit down and you know the margins on the bills, the blank space, put impeach Bush now. I've been known to do that in the margins of my bills because, like you, I'm aware that you can't eat at Joe's. You know, you can't do that.
Right.
But I don't see how impeach Bush now could be anything but political speech.
That's
and
right.
And that it would have to take precedence over a defacing of the currency statute.
That's right. I think the statute basically says it's the Eat at Joe's prohibition, right? I mean, if you're going to make political speech, statute doesn't say anything about that. But I just think it's actually just been interesting to be doing it for a little while. You know,
And of course, you know, you want to do it on ones and fives because they have the highest degree of circulation.
One of the people on the board said that what he does is he actually does it when someone gives him money as change. He does it right there at the register.
Oh, wow. Zip, 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 zip.
Exactly. Oh. And he says it's a real conversation starter.
Oh, I'll bet it is.
I bet in certain parts of the country it would start more than a conversation.
Oh, there's, around here where I am, it'd probably get you a pitchfork and torch procession some evening.
Yeah.
But it would be worth it to do that and to be seen. You know, I still have stuck in my head the day that it was explained to me that NASA needed to be shut down, and this was just right down the road at a car lot here. NASA needed to be shut down because it was just a bunch of heathen scientists trying to prove the non-existence of God. And as somebody who, you know, from time to time engages in a little analytical thinking, I just wanted to stop. I just looked at the guy because the grammar was just, it was like a red hot poker running through to disprove the non-existence of God. Now, I wasn't exactly sure what he meant by the time he was done.
You know, we need NASA for perfectly good things like establishing a colony on Mars after we're done scraping the surface of this planet off.
Right, because, well, you know, I'd like to establish a colony on the moon. It's a lovely place to send Republicans, but you know.
We'll have a conversation sometime about the mountaintop removal thing. My wife is an artist, and she's very interested in doing some work around that. I mean, my feeling about it is, you know, we're not going to win this particular fight until we do three things, and I think we have to do all of them. One is we have to convince people that it's just morally wrong. It's just wrong to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Two, we have to convince people, we have to actually make it very expensive to do it by finding every way we can sue the bastards when they pollute streams and do things downstream as a consequence of it. We need to raise the cost of it. The third thing we need to do is we need to make coal, this is not going to make a lot of friends, of course, but to make coal an irrelevancy. In other words, make it's not worth it. right? Coal becomes actually more expensive.
It should be the fossil, to the extent we're going to use fossil fuel, Scott, coal should be the fossil fuel of last resort.
Agreed.
And the reason that it's used so prevalently, and I don't mean to lecture or anything, and I'm not telling you anything you don't know, the reason is because we make the costs unapparent by virtue of subsidizing its usage. For instance, the nastiest of the companies operating in West Virginia, Massey Energy, these suckers could not make a quarterly profit if their lives depended on it.
Mm.
I mean, they don't make a quarterly profit. They lose money every quarter, and the shareholders turn around and give Don Blankenship, who runs the outfit, another raise. I kid you not. They cannot make money. They would be almost out of business had the Tennessee Valley Authority not violated the law a few years ago and contracted to buy just about every ton they brought out of West Virginia. So you're absolutely right on that third factor. Just pulling away the subsidies would be enough to start making that happen. My congressman, much to my chagrin, but it was also my two senators and every other member of the congressional delegation in West Virginia, only narrowly got thwarted a couple of weeks ago in attempting to ramrod a coal-to-liquid fuels provision through the energy bill.
Right.
If you can imagine, you know, this is a process that was invented by the Nazis. And they were going to compel the Air Force to fly its jets on liquid coal fuel. And they just and it was an effort by the West Virginia delegation, the Kentucky delegation, and the Montana delegation.
And it would have caused
mountains to start being blown up at an even more accelerated rate than what's going on here now.
Well, we're going to see that also as it relates to energy security. You know, we've got to get away from crude oil imported, and the way we can do that is by converting coal into natural gas and into liquid fuel and to burning it directly and so forth, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to hear that. You're going to hear a lot of people. I've been going through school, I've attending basically every alternative energy lecture I can find, and I would say two-thirds of them involve some use of coal as an alternative energy. You're going to convert coal to liquid, and that's called an alternative energy. You're going to convert it to natural gas by a catalytic process. Very cool process. You ask the guy, where are you going to get the coal? Oh, you know how much coal is in Montana? You know, it lasts for 200 years. And energy independence, energy security. So long as you don't care what they do to Montana, I guess that's right.
Yeah.
But my feeling about it is, you know, you've got to make people sort of disgusted to find out that their energy comes from coal. But that's not going to stop the Blankenships of the world, right?
No.
As long as there's money to be made, you're not going to convince them that what they're doing is morally wrong. What you can do is you can make it unprofitable. And that will convince them. Right? You've got to get rid of the subsidies like you're talking about. And you've got to also you've got to pin them for the true costs of what they're doing to the environment. You can't let them have that for free.
Right, because and you know, you've been to the websites, you've seen the photographs. There will not be a hardwood tree grow on any of these sites for the next 10,000 years, because the tree gets up to the sapling stage and starts to send down a taproot, and there's nowhere for it to get subsurface water because the water table's been utterly destroyed.
Right. Yeah, well, they talk about, you know, we're going to do this and then we're going to restore it. And I say, show me some place you've restored.
Oh, there's they'll be happy to, and they'll we get bombarded with commercials, Scott. I'm a football fan. I watch my beloved Mountaineers on Saturdays in the fall, and you can't watch one without getting a commercial showing a deer and a turkey walking across this grassy field. Look at our lovely reclaimed site.
Sure.
Well, you know, those things are shot in Missouri.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, what was it like before? And can you do that in a place like you're saying, where there's old hardwood, old growth forest? Show me a place where someone's restored an old growth forest.
They don't restore.
They don't. It just doesn't happen. You know, they do that all the time around here. They talk about marshland restoration. Mm-hmm. They've never been able to restore a marsh after they've destroyed it.
Of course not.
You know,
but, I mean, something that it is the height. You know the respect that I have for science, but it is the height of hubris to suggest that technology can outdo what it takes natural processes literally millions of years to accomplish.
Well, you know, as a scientist, I'll have to say that's one of the things that annoys me the most, because, you know, these are the same folks that say, don't worry, science is going to solve this problem for us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when the scientists come out and say, well, hold on a second, you know, it's a lot more complicated than science understands at this point, they say, oh, don't listen to these people. They're the same people. We're the same people you're relying on to solve the problem. You won't listen to us when we tell you that when you destroy a habitat like that, we don't know how to restore it. I find that hubris is the beginning of it. I find it so galling.
It would have to be. And I do love it so. I ran across a story out of the LA Times over the weekend about this manuscript that had been found, Scott. And it contained It was from the 9th or 6th century or some such. It was a codex. It was on parchment.
Mm.
And it had been found in about 1910 to contain some words from Archimedes that had never been read before. Archimedes, you know, the water screw,
mm-hmm.
The ship, the galley claw, all that genius stuff.
Exactly.
And then it disappeared during the First World War, and it showed up again in 1998 at an auction. And scientists... The kind of scientists that I really admire looked, and in the interim, the 6th century manuscript had been scrubbed clean with an acidic lemon juice wash or something along those lines, and then some monk had written prayers in it. And then by the time, and that's what it looked like in 1910, when it shows up in 1998, some other fundamentalist freak has painted icons of the evangelists.
That's a better use of the paper, yeah.
And so they thought it was just lost, and it had mold and mildew all over it. It had been poorly kept. It had near burn singe marks on it. And so one guy gets hold of it and applies some scientific methods to it. And finds out that, lo and behold, this is Archimedes that we never knew existed. But he gets to this part where he can't go any further. Meanwhile, another guy's reading a scientific journal, and he's been using some sort of mass spectrometer to trace ionic level amounts of iron in spinach leaves. This is what, somebody, you know, every week, whether he needed it or not, somebody wrote him a check for $38 to do this.
Yeah, right on, yeah.
And he says, hey, can I see it? And he, because he notes that the original ink that the Archimedes text was written in iron gall ink.
Mm.
And so he traces these isotopes, and lo and behold, all but just a very few words come through.
That's cool.
And suddenly something that has literally been lost since the first century B.C. is revealed. And that kind of science just makes me want to run around in the yard and yell and jump for joy, because that's the hope of humanity, Scott.
Mm.
But, you know, then when you commercialize the process and science gets prostituted out to the profit motive, then science comes up with drag lines that take down entire mountains in a day.
Right, right. Well, and then it's actually very interesting to see the way the government uses science and the way the government uses religion. I mean, they understand that both of those things are very potent and control them very carefully. And this government is just, it's probably just been the most open in terms of saying, yeah, you will not say that, or everything you say will have to go through us first before you're allowed to say it. It used to be we would pretend, of course, that science was an open, completely open endeavor, like an open source endeavor, even though it really wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's you know, as a scientist, I've been reading some recently about, you know, this sort of creation science concept, and I can see why the folks say NASA is trying to prove the non-existence of God, right?
No, that's disprove the non-existence of God. Ow.
Yeah, I couldn't get my arms around that.
Don't try.
That syntax.
It's bad for you, man. Bad things happen.
You know, it's right. You know, it's sorry. You know, scientists march on and say, you know what? We're not going to say anything about that. And it's even and that's what they tried to do first. They tried to say, you know what? Science doesn't really say anything about that, right? But then science says some things that cause folks who think the world's 6,000 years old some serious problems, right?
Yeah, like finding 7,000-year-old beer recipes.
Exactly. And, you know, so what are you supposed to say? You're supposed to say the 7,000-year-old beer recipe doesn't say anything about the
dinosaur beer.
The creation myth? It doesn't say? Of course it does, right? So I think, you know, it's a very interesting thing, this sort of detente we currently have going on between science.
But I don't know how much of a detente there is, Scott, because if you noted the what was his name, Carmona, the testimony last week in front of Congress by the Surgeon General,
yeah.
and he finally dropped the dime on him,
yeah.
And told the and told the Congress under oath exactly what he had been forced to do,
yeah.
What he'd been forced to do to his own discipline, to his own life's work. To everything he had been trained to seek from a factual standpoint, he had to subvert all of that to a regime, a mindset, a perversion, if you will, that said that nothing that science, and this is where these people are in the Bush administration, nothing that science has to offer can possibly be compared as being anywhere near as important as the advancement of party politics or the advancement of far right wing ultra orthodox, ultra fundamentalist religious dogma. And when we get to that point, if it's allowed to go on, Scott, I fear for the future. I fear for my kids, my grandkids, and great grandkids we haven't even dreamt of yet, because they're done.
So I totally agree, and let me cycle back to something where we started.
Okay.
So, you know, you get frustrated. I get frustrated. Your callers get frustrated. You can hear it in their voices. You know, we talked about a couple of weeks ago, I guess Bob was talking about, you know, the ammo box and the ballot box and so forth, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can understand why people get frustrated. But, you know, this is the way I feel about it. You know, the system is actually okay. Right now what we have is we have this person who's been elected, and a small minority of people who are very conservative religiously helped push him over the 51%, 49% divide. That small percentage of people, unfortunately, is wielding a disproportionate amount of power, because he can veto stem cell research. He can prohibit the disclosure of scientific information. He can prevent the Surgeon General from doing his job. Because as a president, with the veto, the Congress has to overrule that with a supermajority. So even though that mandate, his stem cell mandate, you know, this sort of deep religious concern over stem cells, really only represents 12% of the electorate who are really that wound up about it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of conservatives have voted for the guy. But it's that 12% of the folks that pushed him over the edge. 12% of the people are now, you know, the tail is wagging the dog. 12% of the people are able to wield a supermajority mandate on issues related to things like stem cell research, abortion, you know, all of these things that have a significant conservative religious component to them. It's very, very frustrating.
Oh, it is, and you know they're also able to wield veto control over something that should, at least to my understanding of Christian dogma and doctrine, should not be something that puts them off, and that's health care.
Mm.
You know, Bush has said he will veto the S-CHIP program, the state children's health insurance program. Legislation. It's an expansion of health care for children in this country. He says he'll veto it because it's socialized medicine. And coming out of the Baptist Church and the other fundamentalist cults, for lack of a better word, is that, you know, we believe this is communism and it's not Christian.
Right. You know, that's actually how In God We Trust, not to go, not to come back. That's how that actually got put on our money. It got put on the money as a Cold War maneuver.
Yeah, because they didn't have no God on their money in the
exactly.
in Russia.
And
them
we wanted
commies.
To prove that we were a godly country.
Yeah, so we put it on our lucre.
Which is, you know, the irony of that won't go.
Well, you know, I mean, the Pledge of Allegiance that we have all these hissies over, I'm sure you know the history of that, too.
Yep.
It was written by a Baptist socialist minister from Massachusetts in 1891, and it said, I pledge allegiance to my flag, and it did not have the words under God in it.
Right.
Under God was added as a result of a fundamentalist lobbying campaign initiated by the Knights of Columbus, again, during the Cold War.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because we had to prove that our flag was godly, because them commies don't have a godly flag.
Exactly. And this is how you tie, religion to the sort of American narrative, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is how you convince this is why you end up having fundamentalist Christians say to you, that sounds to me like socialized medicine, as opposed to saying, that sounds like taking care of children.
Because they have had... They have had religion tied in hand in glove with the idea of authoritarian government, and it stuck.
It stuck, yeah, and it's also the sense of the principles of liberty, of individual liberty, and sort of Protestant self-determination. That's the basis for America, and that's embodied in capitalism. And therefore, you know, see how it all gets tied up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, to tell me socialized medicine, you're going to take the profit motive out of it? There goes my liberty. It's disturbing, but you can see how they get there.
Oh, I do. And the thing is, we haven't gotten good enough yet, or we haven't gotten loud enough or militant enough yet, Scott, about looking at them and saying, but you're driving on the socialized highways.
Right on. Yeah, who do you think makes your medicine, right? I mean, I was trained in order to work for the pharmaceutical industry, right, where I could make lots of money for people, but I could make medicines for people. I was trained in public schools and in universities with public funding.
Mm-hmm.
These are projects that are too large to be done solely based on the short-term profit motive. We understand that.
If you've got one lab operated by one company looking for one drug, then the odds of finding it go down... not exponentially, but whatever the opposite of that is. When you spread out the knowledge base, you spread out the likelihood of coming up with a solution, do you
yeah,
not?
Who knows? You got some guy doing mass spectrometry on spinach.
I love right? that, don't you?
Right?
Yeah.
20 years later, it turns out to be really useful for something else, right? Now, you think Pfizer's going to have a guy doing mass spectrometry on spinach?
No.
I mean, you could maybe argue that, you know, that's a kind of a funny thing to be doing, but...
I want to live in a country that has room enough for potters and artists in
right.
clay who spend every day of their lives making beautiful pots and at the same time is big enough and roomy enough to have room for a guy who is solely fascinated with the progress of an iron molecule through a leaf of spinach. Because
mm-hmm.
that's the essence of a great country, isn't it?
It's the essence of what it takes to get where we are and where we need to go as a society. We didn't get here by being a bunch of sort of individual actors in the sort of libertarian utopia. We didn't get here by that. You know, that what we do is far too complicated and complex and far too interdependent to have arisen that way. The first time someone decides, I mean, we're going to go way back, and I apologize.
Oh, that's okay. Let's go. Fire up the Wayback Machine.
You know, we're going to go back to the first time someone decided to plant and harvest wheat,
mm-hmm.
or whatever it was, right? And they said, you know what? I'm going to spend my time doing this, and you're going to spend your time doing something else, and I'll trade my wheat for your whatever. You know, you defend me, or you hunt meat, or whatever. As soon as we specialized, we became interdependent. And the progress of civilization has been as a consequence of us doing that, becoming interdependent. The guy who follows the iron molecule isotope out of the spinach and down the beam of the spectrometer, right? Guy's not growing his own food.
No.
Not making his own medicine.
He couldn't
right?
do that.
In a car, he doesn't even understand how it works.
No.
You know, and that's the kind of, we have to give up that kind of control in order to advance, in order to be able to do the things that are more complex than any individual person could do.
And
let me cycle back, because I want to say one thing about your show.
Okay.
You know, we get frustrated about where we're headed, and we've got folks like our current president who are able to exercise a supermajority for a very small minority, for the interest of a very small minority. And we can do two things. We can decide that we think that the system stinks and we should chuck it. Or we should let people understand how messed up that is. And I think that's exactly what your program does, and programs like this. You have to put in people's mind that blowing the top of a mountain off is just wrong. Right? They're not going to come to this on their own. They're going to flip the light switch on, and they're going to say, hey, that's pretty cool. And their guys are going to say, yeah, we got you lower energy bills by never mind how we did it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have the voice of people like my wife, who's an artist, and like yourself, I think, who fulfills that very much that same role.
Thank you for that.
Of informing people, there's something not right here, and you can actually change it. You can change it by deciding to change it. You know, it amazes me. It amazed me that it was even close the two times Bush ran. Because that tells me that people didn't understand fundamentally what was going on. Because it can't be. I mean, I would have expected it would have been 70-30. 30% of the country would have been enamored with the conservative ideals and the religious protection of things that they hold very deeply because of their religious beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of the people would have said, well, wait a minute, this is kind of off the charts. I mean, this is we're going to really take all these steps backward and all the things we've done as a society over time. I think it's because people are just generally misinformed.
I'll take you a step further, Scott. Uninformed. When people know more about Paris Hilton's day-to-day life than they know about the operation of their government, that's not miss. That's un.
Well, or unless you would say it's intentionally miss.
Yeah, yeah, that too. Okay.
Look over here. You know?
Yeah, see, look at the birdie. Look at the birdie. Yeah, don't see what I'm picking your pocket with my right hand, but exactly. I got something shiny in my left.
Exactly.
Oh, I know.
But this is the good fight, I think. I think the good fight.
It absolutely.
You know what? This is just wrong.
Yeah, and remember though, whether it's misinformed or uninformed, you know, that statistic that I ran across last week maybe it was Monday. Just made my head spin. 1 in 5 Americans, Scott, 20% of the American population thinks like a 10th century pope. 1 in 5 Americans thinks that the sun orbits the earth. That's the kind of thing that's 20%. If it was 5, I'd say, well, you know, I mean, you know, 5 is
textbooks, yeah.
5 is statistically relevant because it falls within the standard deviation.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to have 5% idiots in any population.
Yeah.
But when
people had a bad day when they were asked a question.
Yeah, you know, or just missed sixth grade the day they got to Copernicus, for God's sakes. But when that statistic rises to 20%, you're dealing with an intentional act
mm-hmm.
on the part of you know, I this is Wednesday, so you know this is when we do this, and I'm convinced it is an intentional act on the part of organized religion
mm-hmm.
and some quarters of our government. You know, as from a governmental standpoint, what you always get from these Republicans is, you know, and you know, you can hear it, the real hardcore conservatives, first thing I'd do if I was president, I'd dismantle the Department of Education.
That's a good idea.
And you know, I hear that and I read that and I feel like I've just been slapped. Yeah, that's what I want to do, dismantle the Department of Education. But they're very sincere in it because it's just part of what they want to dismantle. They want to break this government. Falwell, roasting in hell, even as we speak, was very proud to stand up in public, and you know, nobody threw rotten vegetables when he said it, as they should have. He said, I can't wait till the day when education is back in the hands of the church where it belongs.
Mm-hmm.
And that, oh my God. I mean, that tells you everything you need to know. When Grover Norquist says that he wants to make the federal government small enough that he can drown it in a bathtub, you've got all the information at hand that you need to make an informed decision.
You know, Bob, but we can't meet that with inaction, right?
No.
We can't meet, and that's what I think the Horn is about, right? The Horn is about us saying, you know, we're going to create a space where we're going to confront this stuff head on. Enough already. And I think that's what's important about it, is it's the ability to actually say, you know what, we're going to stand up, we're going to stand time after time when people say such outlandish things, and we're going to challenge them on it. And this is the reason, again, to cycle back to the reason why I didn't want our contribution to the effort to be viewed as a donation. You know, we're not doing this because, you know, isn't it nice if someone gives us permission? We're doing this because we have to. We're doing this because it's a very important thing to do for a lot of people in this country. A lot of us need this done in a very aggressive and proactive way. We need people speaking. And, you know, it's not, please, sir, may I speak? It's like, it's to do the same thing that the religious groups have done. A long-term strategy of affecting the narrative in this country. So that people start to say, well, wait a minute, that doesn't seem right to me when they say these outlandish things. Because they've heard somewhere that there's another side to it, or that what they're saying is just nonsense, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think, you know, people need to sort of vote with their feet, right? I mean, this is an endeavor that takes participation. You know, people need to show up for work, because you know what? These guys show up every day. You watch television. It's remarkable what the media does in terms of getting these things out. Like, that's socialized medicine. And no one challenges that.
The greatest example of that, Scott, is the story of the woman who was burned by coffee at McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
It's not nearly as talked about as it was a few years ago, but that made a real impression on me. McDonald's had been, and with you just getting ready for the bar, this will speak to where you are.
Help me study. I should be studying.
Yeah, well, wait a minute. Right before we hang up, we're going to go into the rule against perpetuities. don't worry, you get to forget it real soon, and you'll never think of it again.
Exactly.
This woman goes to McDonald's. She goes through the drive-thru. She gets a cup of coffee. They fill it up to the brim. You know, when I get a cup of coffee at McDonald's, I have to say, hey, guys, leave room for cream in there, would you?
Yep.
Because, you know, I like to blonde my coffee up pretty nice. That's why I have a cholesterol problem. But anyway, so they fill it up to the brim. She gets in, and she sets it in her lap, and it splashes, I guess, when she goes over maybe the speed barrier there. It splashes, and this scalding hot coffee goes over her genital area and third-degree burns over 100% of her genitals.
Mm-hmm.
She has to have reconstructive surgery. Can you imagine being, you know, a 60-year-old lady having to have reconstructive surgery in your pelvic region, for God's sakes? That can't be anything approaching even tolerable. The hellish pain is unimaginable to me. And so she goes through all this, and she sues McDonald's. And at trial, it is adduced that McDonald's had been warned time and again that the temperature at which they served their coffee was such that it would cause profound burns.
Right.
And it was also adduced at trial through internal McDonald's documentation, discovery, that kind of thing, that McDonald's had been, in addition to having been warned about that, had also made a conscious cost-benefit analysis decision that they would sell more coffee because at that temperature, the coffee smell permeates McDonald's more thoroughly.
Yeah.
And they decided that they would weigh the risks and they would pay the cost to obtain the benefits. And so she gets this humongous judgment that was later reduced on appeal. And all you heard from the right wing was, stupid woman burned herself with coffee and sued McDonald's for it. We live in a victim culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nanny culture, yeah.
Yeah, and as a consequence of that, they hammered that day in and day out, and every time the legislatures of the several states convened, there was always a tort reform bill.
Right.
And they dragged out this poor lady with the burned up crotch and pointed at her as a laughing stock.
Right.
Or as someone who was out to gouge the system, or as George Bush referred to it, she won life's lottery.
Right, right. That's
and they had that message. Yeah, they had that message out there every blessed day, Scott.
Right, because they have the control to do that.
And the trial lawyers, on the other hand, were sitting on their hands, or you know, 6 weeks before an election, they'd buy advertising and try to counter what had been in the public consciousness 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Right.
And you know, in a way, that's what we're up against here at the Horn. Is convincing people, you know, I'm not saying that I can bring the message any better than anybody else, but I'm saying that I and John and Joe and Guy and Mark and Peter are here every blessed day hammering that message home.
Right.
And getting people to understand that, it drives me nuts, Scott. You get it. You get it eloquently. You get it beautifully.
It's necessary.
But we have had the doors slammed in our faces by some of the people that you would have expected that would have gone, oh, my God, you're willing to do this? Here, come here, let me support you.
Yeah.
It's frustrating in the extreme. Right. And that's why we had to get to the point that we hung that button up on the website. And so far, you know, like I said, we're here because we did that. We would have been off the air a month ago if we had not.
Well, you know, like I said in my email, you know, I think this is important work. I'm totally willing to pay for it. Right? Someone needs to do this. I need people taking the debate out.
Yeah.
And well, you know, this is not, again, you know, this is something that, why not co-opt the economic model that says, hey, this is a valuable thing. There's a lot of people who think it's valuable. Let's go sell it. Let's go push it out there. You know, so I don't think you should feel bad for one second. You know, you're providing something that's extremely useful for us. And
it's just hard. It's hard for me to do, Scott, because I so way back, you know, when I was a young man, there was a considerable effort made to get me to go into the ministry. Okay. And I saw them, and I saw their tent revivals, and won't you please help the work of the Lord, brothers and sisters, and pass that plate around, and it would come back just mounded up with money. And I knew what the sucker was doing with it.
But you're not playing a trick on anybody.
Well, no, but I don't even like, but I mean, that's where it was in my head.
Yep.
And so I can't stand the thought that anybody would ever even think that I'm trying to do that. But you're absolutely right. I mean, I don't do this every night because I'm using you guys for my personal psychiatrist because I can't afford one. I want this to be a dialogue. I want this discussion. I love this conversation and every one that takes place on this network far more than I do sitting and rambling on and listening to my own voice roar inside my head.
You think Rupert Murdoch has this problem when he buys the Wall Street Journal?
No.
You know?
Yeah.
See, he's out to take over the world. Right? He's out to express his political power and his economic power. You know what? Let's do the same thing.
Yes, let's.
You know, let's get out there and say, you know what? If you guys won't make a radio network for us, guess what? We'll do it ourselves.
We've got
the internet, we've got the technology, we've wrested the technology from you. All we have to do is get the people willing to contribute.
I had a conversation last night with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And it was what Wayne was talking about a few minutes ago, Scott. He had come down to the Coal River Valley, and we got together in a bunch of us with regard to the mountaintop removal issue, had come together in a little church at a place called Rock Creek in Raleigh County. And he came down there to talk to the group. And one of the things he said along the way is, he said, I don't know what the answers are. I didn't necessarily come here to give you answers. But what I can tell you is part and parcel of the process is that we have got to build our own media. And we have got to demand, not ask nicely anymore, but demand campaign finance reform.
Right.
So that our government can be taken, we can take our government back and quit allowing it to be bribed away from us. And so when I got a chance to talk to him later in the evening when it was all said and done, I said, what you said about building it ourselves? He says, yeah. I said, well, we did.
Mm-hmm.
And I explained to him what we've done with the Horn, and he looked at me, and his eyebrows went up, and he said, you did what? I said, yeah, from 3 hours a night, 5 nights a week, to 13 hours a day, 5 days a week, and trying to expand to 24/7. He said, how did you do it? I said, it didn't take anything but a whole lot of passion and a whole lot of dedication and a whole lot of people willing to put in a whole lot of time.
Yep.
And it was kind of interesting because he said, I bet you'd have a few things you could say to Mark Green at Air America. I said, yeah, a few. A few.
Yeah, you create it yourself.
Oh, and the thing is, the idea that's behind this, Scott, can go so much further. And it's not just us. I wasn't trying to goon on the blogosphere earlier when I said what I did,
yeah.
But it can go so much further. Can you imagine, for instance, a Washington Bureau of independent journalists putting their information out there every day, whether it's audio or video or print,
right.
And putting it out there outside the model of the current system? Supported by people who wanted that kind of thing, and I'm not talking about necessarily individuals. There are, there are business people out there that are allied with our way of thinking.
Right.
But the problem that lies therein, Scott. Oh dear, I must have the soapbox out. The problem that lies therein is that so much of what you run into among the liberals that you think should be committed to something like this. Is that there is a degree of cronyism there that is as entrenched and in-depth as anything the right wing has to offer.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if somebody, pick a famous liberal actor, whatever, he has this idea that he wants to create a radio network. Well, he'll put it out on the PR wire and have $6 million sitting in his lap by tomorrow.
Right.
But because, you know, I'm not a famous liberal, I'm just a committed one. Well, that system doesn't necessarily work for us. So we have to wait until some sort of critical mass obtains, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
When the sheer force and weight of what we're doing becomes overwhelming. And so we get in there and we plug away every day and every night and, you know, like I said, adding shows all the time. We've got another show debuting Saturday night and another one that's in development beyond that. And it's all people who are desperate to create this dialogue, to create this opportunity for discussion. And
a couple of unique things there. One is the fact that, you know, the model of getting a terrestrial broadcast network, other than in the car, and even then, half the time I'm listening to a podcast,
mm-hmm.
I don't get my information from terrestrial radio. A lot of times I actually stream from the same stations I might otherwise be listening to. So the fact that you have a medium that you can transmit over at a relatively low incremental cost is one thing that allows you to create a network in a way that hasn't been done before. I think the second thing is the conversation format is fundamentally different than what you get in a blog, what you get in the print media, and what you get almost anywhere else in the media where anything that takes longer than 10 seconds is met with a commercial interruption. So I think that, you know, the kinds of things we're talking about, the kinds of issues that we've been talking about, we talk about on the show all the time, require a conversation, a back and forth. In the same way, wait, I didn't mean exactly that. I meant this. I see your point, but don't you see maybe there's a case here where that wouldn't apply? That's a conversation. And the way you've structured the network, I think, is very good that way. It makes it very interesting to listen to. We listen to it all the time while we're making dinner or, you know, podcast during the day. You listen to the conversation unfold, and you're like, yeah, I could see where maybe I would have taken a left or he took a right, but, you know, it's so different than the old media model where sort of moribund, actually. If you want to talk about it, and just say, you know, forget that. Forget the old model. And we're going to take this thing out. Be nice if you could get some corporate sponsors,
mm-hmm.
You know, and maybe that will come when we create a world in which there are corporations like the ones we would like to have. You know, friends of mine at law school were talking about basically creating an alternative community through contract, where you say, you know what, we are going to agree by contract that profit is not the only motive for this corporation. Other corporations that are publicly traded have this problem that they have to maximize profit, or at least they believe that's true. You know.
Well, and yet, we know that there are other models. There are other corporate models because European corporations do not operate under the same strictures that American corporations
exactly.
do. They can wait for the profit to roll in. It's that quarterly model. It's that got to put in a quarter of a penny per share per quarter that makes for a corporate structure that is not only inefficient but weak. It can be stronger. I mean, for heaven's sakes, Mercedes-Benz survived the Second World War.
Yeah.
Because of a model like that.
Yeah.
Not because it had slave labor during the Second World War, but because it had been structured from decades previously to be able to withstand long-term pressures. Ford is on the verge of collapsing for partly that reason. And, of course, the American Family Association is proud to point out that they're destroying Ford because they have the gall to advertise in the Washington Blade or some such.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't understand. With all the genius that rolls out of the Harvard MBA program and the Wharton School of Business, apparently what, Scott? Are they just training army ants? Nobody's thinking beyond the present structure.
Well, I mean, my experience in having been in some of these very places that you've mentioned is that it's not really about army ants. It's about the folks that are going to take the cream from this process, right? I mean, those are the people that will create the kinds of corporations that enrich them the most. So it shouldn't surprise you. It shouldn't surprise you that you end up with corporations.
Well, it also seems
when you figure out how the profit is actually distributed once it's made.
It also seems very much to me like it's a 3-year fraternity initiation, too.
It is. It's sort of
everything short of riding the goat.
It's freakish, actually. Yeah.
Well, Scott, I have so enjoyed this conversation, and I thank you for your kind words about the network, and I thank you for reframing it too, because I don't feel like what we do every day is a donation issue. But I also want to make it clear that this, you know, we're not trying to pile enough money together for the Acapulco vacation.
Well, I think reframing it is where it's at. You know, we can't allow other people to take. You know, we'll have a conversation some evening about what economists ought to be saying about for-profit healthcare and why they're not saying it. You know, we need to reframe these issues. We need to take that language away from them and use it in exactly the same way they use it, but to the purposes of taking care of people and of having people advance together as opposed to having a small group advance and leaving the rest behind. And I think that, you know, if there's anything I've learned in law school, it's that framing the debate is the beginning and end of the whole problem. If you're going to win, it's all about getting people to choose your word to describe the problem.
Well, that's absolutely the truth, and that's a tremendous place to learn it too, along with what is it, the rules of primacy and recency? Have they hammered you over the head with that one yet?
And the rule against purple chewy things.
Oh, God, the purple chewy things. Forget them the minute that the bar is over, Scott. You will never need them again.
We'll give you a call after the exam.
I hope so. I can't wait to celebrate your passage of the bar on air, because I know you will.
All right, hang in there, man.
Will do. Scott, okay. Oh, by the way, I want to hear more about your wife's art sometime soon.
Well, you know, she may be the one who calls next.
Okay, that'll be wonderful.
All right.
You take care.
Okay, later.
Bye now.
Bye.
Scott in Salem, Massachusetts. I think Scott just put on a clinic for what conversation radio is all about, don't you, Agnes?
Yes, I want you to say something.
Ow! Okay. Sorry, I guess I got pinched. We have to do this to calibrate the equipment. Oh my God, who God only knows. We'll come back with some prayer meeting fun right after the news. You're listening to America's Progressive Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The Lord is with thee, blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb.
This is the Quality News Network. In Brazil, rescuers are recovering bodies from the smoldering wreckage of last night's jetliner crash, while others look for someone to blame. Critics say concerns have been expressed for years about the dangers of the Sao Paulo airport, but no action was taken. All 186 people on board the Airbus 320 died when it skidded off a wet runway and crashed. An all-night Senate session ended with a defeat for the Democrats' plan to bring U.S. troops home from Iraq by April next year. In a 52-47 vote, Republicans blocked the latest attempt to force a troop withdrawal. The Pentagon announced Iraq's top al-Qaeda chief was arrested in Mosul earlier this month. Abu Shahid is believed to be the go-between for al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda leaders in Iraq. In northwest Pakistan, near the Afghan border, militants ambushed a military convoy, first with bombs, then with gunfire, killing at least 17 Pakistani soldiers. Tensions continue to escalate after an army siege on a militant mosque a week ago. In the wake of the Gaza takeover last month by Hamas, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas says he'll order early elections. The ousted leader announced his plan during a speech in the West Bank. A former aide to the Vice President Dick Cheney is sentenced to 10 years in prison for spying. Last year, Leandro Argoncia pleaded guilty to taking sensitive documents and faxing them to the Philippines. They were used there to try and force that country's president out of office. The wife of murdered Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl is suing Pakistan's largest bank and 23 people responsible for killing her husband. Marianne Pearl filed the suit seeking unspecified compensation in a New York court. A shutdown has been ordered for a Japanese nuclear power plant damaged by an earthquake Monday. The world's largest nuclear power plant suffered more problems from the quake than originally thought. In Beijing, the UN's nuclear watchdog agency confirmed today North Korea has shut down all five of that country's nuclear facilities. Lawmakers are criticizing the FDA's plan to close 7 of its 13 testing labs, saying the cost-cutting move will increase Americans' risk of consuming contaminated foods. House members say of particular concern is the safety of imported goods. You are listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and the victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of rancor. You got married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
A study released today says that a mega flood that occurred 400,000 years ago is what separated Britain from France. The flood released 35 million cubic feet of water per second. That raised water levels and created the English Channel. Archaeologists are urging Jordanian officials to slow tourist development near the ancient ruins of Petra. If protective measures aren't taken immediately, the site may sustain significant damage. And a diet favoring fresh fruits and vegetables does not appear to prevent the return of breast cancer. That's the finding of a long-term medical study just released. Costs for food and energy dropped in June, improving benchmark figures for wholesale inflation and industrial production. However, home builders' confidence has plummeted to the lowest level in more than 15 years. Shares in Yahoo dropped more than 4% after the online company posted a decline in quarterly profit. Struggling company says online ad revenues continue to fall. That while IBM posted a double-digit rise in net income, that exceeded Wall Street's expectations. Light sweet crude is trading at $75.05 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones Industrials was down 53 points at 13,918. There's more on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Laurel Christen.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All right, there's something worth talking about. It's 8.5 minutes after the hour. You may have heard it in the QNN Top of the Hour news. A former aide to Dick Cheney today was sentenced to 10 years in prison. He passed secret U.S. documents to the in an effort to topple the Philippine government. The guy's name is Leandro Argancio. He was a military aide to Vice Presidents Al Gore and Dick Cheney, starting in the late 90s, before he joined the FBI as a civilian employee at Fort Monmouth, New Jersey. His guilty plea came in May of 2006 to four charges, the most serious of which was conspiracy to transmit national defense information. He carried the death penalty, but instead he's going to get 10 years. He was fined $40,000. He said in his statement to the court, quote, "I never intended to cause harm or injury to the United States." He has no possibility of parole, and he will have to serve nearly the entire sentence, with the possible exception of some good inmate credits. Assistant U.S. Attorney Assistant Attorney General Weinstein said, quote, "Those charged with protecting the nation have a special responsibility to maintain their oath of loyalty to the United States." As a former U.S. Marine and FBI analyst, Argancio betrayed that oath, violated our espionage laws, and now must suffer the consequences of his actions. Do I have to tie the story? Do I have to do the rest of it? "Those charged with protecting the nation have a special responsibility to maintain their oath of loyalty to the United States." Will his sentence be commuted? This brown man? This man of Filipino extraction? Will Mary Matalin and James Carville, did they write impassioned letters talking about his children to the sentencing judge, Judge Walls? Is there a stack of letters 360 pages high, testifying to the good character and fundamental basic decency of Mr. Argancio? Are there heartfelt letters with coffee cup ring stains on them talking about how once upon a time on a secret mission with Vice President Cheney, Mr. Argancio pulled together an impromptu Halloween party for the children in the remote undisclosed location? No. No. This guy ran some documents through a fax machine. He didn't out a spy. He did not compromise countless numbers of undercover CIA operatives in the Middle East. He was not exercising a political vendetta against another political party in the United States. No. No. And he was not, of course, white. And he's going to do 10 years hard time. He's going to do 10 years making little ones out of big ones. A door is going to slam behind him that will not open for 10 long years. He did wrong. But I'm still waiting to see if the administration will issue that statement that says, "I decided to let the jury verdict stand, but I thought the punishment was excessive." This guy's getting 10 years for putting documents through a fax machine. Can we please get over the idea that justice is a lady with a sword and a balance and a blindfold? The blindfold is gone. And the sword, well, the balance, the balance, the blindfold is gone, and the balance reads whites only. In Georgia, a man has been given a temporary stay of execution, whom almost all evidence now says is not guilty of the murder for which he was convicted and sentenced to death. The Attorney General of Florida says that this, or of Georgia rather, says that the proof of this man's innocence does not constitute a legal reason for not executing him. The former director of the FBI has opined that this man should not be executed. He is not guilty of the crime. The people who implicated this man were visited by police who told them, well, that's fine, don't tell me he done it. We know he done it. We done been told he done it. Don't you tell me, though, and once we got him, we're going to come back for you, boy. That's not Bob just sort of extemporizing. Those are words from sworn transcripts. We'll get you for accessory after the fact, boy. That's all right. Don't talk to us. That's how they got their evidence that the man committed the crime. Again, on the statue of justice, the balance that she holds in her hand now reads whites only. And not just whites. Let's edit that a little bit. Rich whites only. Mr. Argencio cannot go to the court and say, well, I'm going to prison for 10 years, but here, let me pay you the $40,000 up front, Judge. There is no term of supervised release on the back end of his sentence. Now, you heard it on QNN, and bless them for even bringing the story up. This man was an aide to Dick Cheney. But Dick Cheney is not prone to stepping in and exercising his rehabilitative powers on behalf of the House help. This man was a security analyst. But he is not entitled to the good offices of Dick Cheney. There's the answer, Agnes. There's the answer. This man was trying to change the situation for poor people in the Philippines. He didn't have any dirt on Richard B. Dick Cheney. He didn't have the requisite extortion material. There was no fear that he would be called to testify in front of the Congress. So there is no commutation. And if this man has children, they will grow up without their father. The plot involved the theft of classified national defense documents from the White House and the FBI. Argencio was recruited in 2000 by opposition forces and began working with Aquino in early 2005. He admitted passing information to Aquino and opposition politicians in his homeland who wanted to oust Philippine President Gloria Macapagal Arroyo. Sickening, isn't it? Absolutely sickening. Let me tell you a little bit about what happened. I'm changing gears. Because if I don't get away from that story, I'll be screaming, and you're tired of me screaming. Tell you a little bit about what happened last night. I wasn't here because I went down to a place called Rebecca Chapel. Charming little church in the country, Methodist church, where a group of people who are tired unto death of being stolen from, lied to, attacked, gathered together to listen to Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as he tried to give hope, tried to perhaps point to another direction, and tried to encourage people not to lose heart in a desperate and difficult fight. It was inspiring. A number of people stood up after he made his remarks and told him a little bit about what it's like being there. Gathered across the way were some sleazoids from Massey Energy, hoping, I suppose, somehow to intimidate the process, because they have to show up. These slaves for Massey Energy have to show up. But it's obvious there is a swell and a change in attitudes about what's being done to southern West Virginia, and frankly, what is coming to mountains that are not 3 miles from me. In the near future, it may very well be that in the middle of this program, you will hear a rumble come across the microphone, and you'll know that they're blowing up the mountains near my home. What I said 3 years ago, 4 years ago, when I tried to explain to people that if you turn your backs on southern West Virginia and the Coal River Valley and Logan County and Boone County, that's all right, you could turn your backs, but soon enough it would be in their backyard. And it will be. And it's going to be in mine. But there were a lot of very useful things said by Mr. Kennedy, among which was the fact that we have got to, and you know, we're doing this. It was very pleasant when I told him what we're doing. You really are? You've built that? You just made a progressive talk radio network? Yes, sir, we did. But he pointed toward the fact that we have to build our own. We have to stand on our own. If we want political change, we have to run our own candidates. That's why I was fascinated with the story from the New York Times that I opened the program with. This idea of making the primary process fair. I don't know what it's going to take to get it across to progressives, liberals, decent people who care about not only themselves, but their children and the future of their children and their grandchildren and what this America looks like. Not just 100 years from now, but in as little as 20 years. What it's going to take to get them to understand that we cannot wait for a leader. We must be our own leaders. We must be the ones who stand up and take the chance, who stand up and answer the call. And part of that call lies in participating in the political process. It lies in running for alderman or ward healer or councilman or what start with the local politics, because what is it? All politics is local. Start there and work up. That's why it's so frustrating to watch third parties say, oh, we're going to run a presidential candidate. Good for you. You need to be running somebody for mayor somewhere. Because that's how you build a movement. Me, I'm inclined to stay in the Democratic Party because I don't want to be a Republican. and I want to change the Democratic Party. And we cannot afford to any longer be apolitical. And Mr. Kennedy was very, very correct in pointing that out. He also, Scott said a little bit earlier about framing and about setting up the issues, very, very clear, because it was beautifully said by Mr. Kennedy that, in fact, those of us who speak to environmental issues, the other side calls us tree huggers, and they say that we're some sort of neo-pagans, and that there's some sort of a disconnect between being a follower of, among others, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter, that there's a disconnect between that and caring about the earth. And ever so eloquently, he said, we need to make them understand, we're not doing this for the fish. We're not doing this for the birds, the snail darter, or the spotted owl. We are doing this for people. We are doing this for our children. I've got to get the website, because there's something you might be very interested in. He mentioned one of the organizations he's involved with, you can cut off a lock of your hair and send it to them, and they will do a mercury analysis for you and send it back and tell you how much mercury is in your system. The fellow that analyzed Mr. Kennedy told him, if you were a woman of childbearing years, I would advise you not to have children, because the amount of mercury that is in your system would be sufficient to cause a 5 to 10 IQ point loss. And the fact of the matter is, that is something that is present by virtue of the coal that is burned in this country, about which we were talking just a little bit ago. Those levels are that high in virtually every woman of childbearing years in this country. I don't know what it does to the male reproductive system. I can't imagine that sperm are somehow immune to the effects of mercury, or the genetics in, the genetics inside the spermatozoa are somehow immune. I know we, as the people who have the mercury in us, are not immune. Talk about the dumbing down of America. The other thing that Mr. Kennedy said was that we have got to start talking about this, and Scott echoed this last hour. We've got to start talking about this stuff in terms of crimes. These are crimes. He said if the stuff that's happening in West Virginia was happening in New York, people would be put in jail for it, but not here, because our political process in this state has been co-opted. It was a fascinating, fascinating, inspiring moment. And it wasn't just inspiring because Mr. Kennedy was there. What was inspiring were the people who came to see Mr. Kennedy, because they're living it every day, and in the face of neighbors who have stopped talking to neighbors, it's like a civil war. They soldier on, and they do it for the people who oppose them, because their children are being poisoned too. And it would be so easy to say, well, screw you, buddy. You work for the SOBs. You deserve it. But they don't. They don't. And that is the decency of a progressive heart and a progressive spirit. And I'm sorry I was away from the microphone last night, but I was mighty proud to be among the people I was among. It gives heart. We'll take a break and come back. This is America's progressive voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
there's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com. A place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
I can see your fortune, your fortune.
And again, I was talking about the Republican debate. So we'll get to the point where we're going to drag a terrorist out to the stage with the Republicans, and they're all going to take turns kicking him in the nuts and see who the audience cheers for the most. That's going to determine who's going to be the Republican candidate. Because that's what they are. Kick them in the nuts. How do they do that on South Park? Rochambeau. They're going to Rochambeau the terrorists.
Come on, rub my nipples while I torture this little piggy.
Now that sounds pretty sweet to me.
The Cup of Joe radio show with your host, Joe Vecchio, the working man's thinking man. Moving to 11 a.m. to noon, June 18th, right here on America's Liberal Voice, the Head On Radio Network.
Your life is my problem, your foot in my face.
I never thought my daughter and I would ever think the same thing is cool.
At home, my boys are like a wrecking ball. But when they volunteer, they're actually shaping things up.
Hey, they plant a tree at the local park. Clean the place up.
She makes new friends. She has a great time.
My son loves it. He's contributing.
These are nice kids.
The Are You Into It volunteer program is a great way for you and your kids to make a difference in the community while making friends. So, if you're into it, or you think your kid might be, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH. Or visit our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
We can't get him to clean his room, but he loves volunteering.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
Okie doke. Agnes loves this song. She puts on her dark glasses and does her Uma Thurman thing every now and then. I love it. It's so cool. I don't want to put anybody off their dinner or anything. No, I mean by me talking about it, not you, dear. No, you're hot. Let's go talk to David in Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing good. You?
Yeah, doing all right. To add on what you were talking about. What we need to do as progressive. We also need to realize another thing, Bob, which is this is what separates me from a lot of people. I always believe that the human species are different tribes of pirates. And a lot of people say, well, you have to follow laws and you have to follow all of the laws. Well, to me, there comes a time in civilization where you have to start bending the laws. And that goes from everything to royalties, to compensations for certain services. And the reason why that's happening now, and you see it, and it comes out when they say piracy at an all-time high. And the reason why it's happening is because someone put the authoritative finger in the face and said, you will not do this because it's illegal or it's wrong. And the minute you do that, you know, you just create an influx of more people automatically.
Well, you're talking about the forbidden fruit aspect, sure.
Yeah.
But I object, you know, regardless of where somebody comes down on this issue, David, I reject and I resent the use of the word piracy, okay? We have real pirates in the world today. They're not running around on sailing ships.
Right.
And they don't have cutlasses in their teeth, and they don't say, yarr. Okay?
Right.
Nothing. Yeah, none of that. We have real pirates sailing the seas. Southeast Asia, the Indian Ocean, the eastern coast of Africa is absolutely replete with them, and they are bloodthirsty, murdering monsters. Okay? They are. Now, somebody who downloads a song has nothing in common with a guy who will shoot you for breathing.
That's true. And
at all.
That's true, and it's the framing of language also.
Yeah.
So,
well, let me continue.
Yeah.
There are also pirates who wear silk suits.
Mm-hmm.
And they come to work in limousines. And their job, and they will kill you for a cross look or a lawsuit or anything that threatens their profit margin. Don Blankenship of Massey Energy is one such pirate. So is the CEO of Peabody and Arch Coal. These are monsters. These are people who have perverted a constitutional government that should belong to you and me to be something that exists to serve their greedy ends. Okay? And again, they have nothing in common with some 15-year-old kid who downloads the latest single and then decides he wants to go out and buy the album. Nothing in common. You know, it's worth remembering, as I've pointed out a couple of times, the single greatest year of sales that the recording industry had was the year before they killed Napster. And it's been downhill ever since.
That's true. And what I'm saying is I'm saying that the word pirate, I believe, has been demonized to the point of no return. But that's really what's in a lot, most human nature.
You mean to, well, to...
But what I'm saying is completely different. I'm saying... I'm talking about steering in uncharted waters, and that whether it's politically, computer technology, that's what I'm not talking about the morality issue of that, of taking, completely robbing and plundering somebody. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about different aspects of that. I believe, personally, Bob, that there are good pirates in the world. That's what I believe. And I believe the term was demonized.
Okay. I mean,
I think it's, and you know what? I think a lot of it is a myth. I mean, a lot of it builds on this perception that these guys on the seas and what have you were stealing everything, but at the same time it's like projection too, Bob, because someone's always taking something.
If you go back to the historical model of the guys in the sailing ships with the bandanas on their head, the cutlasses in their teeth saying yar a lot, those guys were, well, just to use one example, to the Spanish they were pirates, to the English they were freedom fighters.
Right, exactly. And I'm saying to take, we have hit a point as progressives to take a point where eventually we're going to have to, we're bending laws now. We are all bending laws to get to the point of being a maverick and having the control of that steering wheel. And if we just say, no, we can't do that, and we just follow everything level, we will never get anywhere. That's what I'm saying. You have to go in those uncharted waters, and you have to take that risk. And if you do something, and if you do something that's quote unquote controversial, or risque, or you know, or it's on the lines of legal, illegal, so be it. That's what I'm talking about. If you don't do that, I mean, let's be honest. Most of the hackers in the world are developing something great. They have developed something great for the internet, and a lot of them are clearly bastards, but at the same time a lot of them opened a lot of doors that we wouldn't have today.
Well, don't they even have a there's some sort of code of honor or something? There's hackers versus crackers, and I'm functionally illiterate where that is concerned, but by the same token, who's the hacker? Who's the crook? Is it the guy who is flooding my email box even as we speak with satisfy her longer, make her happy through the night emails.
Right.
Or, you know, permit me to introduce myself. I apologize for this peremptory email, but I have just received a great deal of money from my Nigerian oil wells. Those guys are crooks, okay?
Exactly, yeah.
I cannot put them on the same par with a guy who finds holes in software.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying there are different levels.
Sure.
And divisions.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But what I'm saying, it's clearly what's happening right now, Bob. We can't be on that level line anymore. We tried that. That's when you're gonna have to keep. That's the risk. You're gonna have to bend whatever it is. If the royalties, if they try to shut down the internet, hey, you're gonna have. People are going to have to go the illegal route eventually. That's
well, you know, over a million people, as a result of things like the Day of Internet Radio Silence that we participated in, over a million people contacted their member of Congress. And they were not, I assure you, David, contacting Congress on behalf of the Sound Exchange that wants to charge Live 365 $50,000 a year. Now, bear in mind, a radio station pays nothing or next to it to play a song.
Exactly. And with a situation like that, Bob, people are going to have to stand up, and they are going to be at that point where, am I going to go on the air today and play this song and not care and have millions of others follow me, or am I going to cower in the corner and say no?
Well,
because, listen, that's exactly what happens with a situation. They tried to do that. They tried to do that with internet mail. They were going to charge money for it.
Oh yeah, I remember.
They still were going to do it. Then people said, "You know what? Screw you." That's the kind of stance we need to take.
Well, and to a certain extent, some of that is happening.
Yeah.
You know, it was announced that there was a deal. We were all happy about it last week. There was a deal, and then the internet radio wasn't going to shut down on July the 15th. Well, the Sound Exchange came out long about Monday then and said, "Wait. We made no promises. There's no deal." We may yet charge these people $50,000.
Did you ever think of talk? I saw the report on Sound Exchange on Now with David Brancaccio, and their offices looked like something out of Austin Powers. But
the good part or the bad part?
I mean, it looked interesting. I mean, they looked like they were trying to be modern and, you know, hipster and the suave and, you know, on the 21st century, kind of going back to the.
But the
Space Bachelor pad, look, Esquivel and all that.
The other route, though, that you're describing, I think, David,
yeah,
is one where, you know, do you get on the air and say, screw it, I'm going to play this song anyway. There's another alternative, and I know that you're tapped into it, because there's a world of music out there that is wonderful, absolutely mind-bendingly good. And
it's true.
And it ain't getting played.
Yeah,
you know,
is this the
wake up call in a way for us for those of us who love music to go out there and find the people who deserve to be played, who deserve to be heard, who want to be heard, who do not want to get in bed with the Sound Exchange?
Well, you know, I think that would be a good conversation. Have you ever tried reaching out to Sound Exchange?
No, because I don't like them and I don't like swearing at people on the radio.
Well, I mean, you might want to hear just like. From someone who represents them, just like gets out the violin for an artist or something. Because when they were on, I'm going to be honest, Bob, when they were on Now with Bernardo Rincaccio, I understood their point. I understood where they're coming from. I understood that it was a business, and I understood that these lawyers had jumped on this artist rights craze or whatever you want to refer it to. And, you know, and at the same time, I understand your point of view, but. I mean, there needs to be some kind. Like I said, there needs to be some kind of dialogue. I wasn't really, to be honest.
Well, I want artists to get paid. I desperately want artists to get paid. I believe in the value of arts and artists in the society. The question is, however, I suppose, to what extent is an artist paid out of these schemes? You said the Sound Exchange has a highfalutin office.
Yeah.
Well. You know what? Some dude has a bar in Busted Knuckle, Montana, and he's been shaken down by ASCAP or BMI.
Mm-hmm. I heard about that, and now I was in.
And that's what pays for the highfalutin, high tech offices of Sound Exchange. And there's not a there's probably not a single guy in Sound Exchange that can make a damn G chord on a guitar neck. You know what I mean?
That's true, and I'm guessing though that there are some stories of artists who are claiming to be heard by it, and maybe you know they're just be. You know, a lot of people get to them in the in management, and they say, "Someone, this person is taking money away from you. You're going to let them sit there and do that?"
Well,
and,
what I'm getting at, I think, David,
yeah.
is that this is not about the artist. This is not about the guy who makes or the girl who makes the music.
Oh, it's about manipulation.
It's about supporting lawyers. Okay, it's about supporting the lawyers and the executives for the RIAA and the Sound Exchange. Because, you know, the guy out there who's trying to put together a disc in his basement studio isn't having lobster Thermidor for dinner, but the lawyer for the RIAA and the Sound Exchange damn sure is.
That's true. And then at the same time, you have a lot of artists who, for some damn reason, they just love siding. I've come into contact with some of these guys.
Well, they've been told that they'll never sell another disc if they don't bow and scrape.
That,
I mean, this
they
isn't.
They really are losing serious. They think that this is really they're losing serious money. They're just paranoid of some of an open door. And
well, but what I'm getting at is I agree with what you say about moving forward and finding a dialogue here, David.
Yeah.
Because the thing that is apparent out of all this is the old model doesn't work.
That's true. The old model doesn't work, and I think it's absurd to think that you're going to
I mean, was it you that sent me the article about Prince putting his new album out on a newspaper in the UK?
I think someone else did that. I might have mentioned it. Yeah, he did that, and you know, he definitely got in trouble with the label. They dropped him in the UK, by the way.
Yeah, they did.
They dropped him in the UK, but you know, at the same time, he's Prince, and he can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's come up with the system of Warner Brothers, so, you know, he's going to take whatever he can. I mean, hey, he played a show for, you know, this is the absurdity of all. He played a show in the Hamptons for $15,000 a ticket.
Well, then you can.
You know, and it was ridiculous. And, I mean, the only thing people got to do.
Well, this is a hard issue, though, because
yeah.
it's not just musicians. It's songwriters.
That's true.
It's small independent publishing companies.
And it's really simple. I mean, I know this is going to make them mad, but they're going to have to take the hit the same way software takes the hit. And they don't like that answer. And I tell them, what other option do you have? Do you actually think you're going to sue the universe?
Well, but cooperate and learn to work inside the system as it develops, as opposed to simply trying to destroy it.
I honestly think that these people are just better marketers. And street teamers on the blogs getting the word out on the album, and people are just, these labels are mad that their tax write-offs might develop an audience. I think there is a conspiracy, Bob. They might develop an audience and branch off from their major label and figure out, hey, I don't need you. I think there's a little bit of that, too.
Well, this all goes into the, you know, we talk about media ownership. And most of the time when we talk about it on this program, or you hear it talked about, in other progressive circles, David, it's done in terms of, well, you know, the right wing owns all the daggum radio stations. We'll never, and it's true. You know, we had the guy on from Center for American Progress to talk about it. The study doesn't lie. It's true. For every word of talk radio that's progressive, there are 10 that are conservative, right wing, Republican, whatever you want to call them. But the thing that's very seldom mentioned is the same factors apply to the arts and to artistic media like music or film. That's what makes it so hard to get quality stuff out there. When I talked to the guy from Center for American Progress, he was very clear when I finally asked him, Mr. Lynch, I believe it was, I said, is this a divestiture issue? And he said, yes. You know, until such time as independent labels don't ultimately have to go to Sony to get the damn disc pressed.
It's also having to jack the price up and where it's has had a set price. And, you know, I talked to some of the people on industry boards, and this is their answer, Bob. They go, it used to be a beautiful business. And I always ask this, why do you say that so often? You say it used to be a beautiful business. And they explain the lifestyle that they had and the people that were working under them. And, you know, it really comes down to this. The music industry didn't prepare for the new model, and their lifestyles are just getting hatcheted left and right. And the CEOs, these guys that they worship, they remain at the top, and their lifestyles don't change.
Well, there's no clear answer, David, but it seems to me that if the theft and piracy issue was so profound, Jimmy Buffett would not have Radio Margaritaville beaming his live concert audio 24/7 on the internet.
This is how I shut them up, Bob. I say this. I say, why are you people acting like when I go on a message boards? Why are you people acting like web sheriffs? I bet you if I asked to see your hard drive, I would find illegal copyright after illegal copyright after JPEGs, articles, music, media, what have you. And you don't even realize it. So for you to criticize me or anyone else from experiencing any kind of downloading is just absolutely bizarre. And you know what happens, Bob? There is not an answer for that.
No, there's not. And inherent inside that question, David, is the issue of what happens when you pay the money. See, Sony, among others, is, you know, they got caught with the whole rootkit deal a couple of years ago. And what's going on, if I understand it correctly, and Microsoft is just knuckles deep in this too. They are trying to redefine. I mean, they're trying to respond to what's going on in the digital world, but they're responding in a negative fashion. The idea that you buy a CD or you buy a song and that song belongs to you.
I know that that's.
That, well, attacking that paradigm, that model, that concept is at the heart of what they're doing. For instance, the Zune thing that Microsoft put out.
Right.
I checked out one of those for a couple of days, and it went back to the store in a hurry.
And I got to tell you, I got to tell you about iTunes. I don't trust them with royalties one bit. I don't see how a system that extensive. And just everywhere and say, well, everyone just takes care of the royalties. I mean, I hear horror story after horror story, a lot of these people who are not getting paid. They're not seeing anything. And then some people are, you know, so it's kind of like the healthcare system, I guess. It's a crapshoot.
Yeah, well, and what's going on with this, with the new model, though, is that they want to get it across and they want to make people believe that they do not own a song to listen to for themselves. With the Zune model and the so-called community that Microsoft put up, as long as you're paying that monthly subscription fee, you can listen to all the music you want to on your Zune. The minute you don't pay that fee, the music stops playing on your Zune.
And also think about this, the last point. When you look at what this, I don't fault the people in the industry who are in that position who work there. I do not fault them. I do fault, however, the CEO and all of those people that tie themselves to an investor pool of different private investors. This is what they have to do. They have to tell these private investors automatically what's happening with the music industry. Why is it going down? They automatically have to start spinning, just like a politician. Well, you know that piracy thing.
Yeah, it's the pirates.
Yeah, I mean,
it has nothing to do with a bad corporate structure. It's what I was talking about with Scott earlier.
I know, and that's what I'm saying. That I don't fault the people who are doing that, but the CEO who is afraid to take a pay cut in the industry, that's who they should go after, not the people downloading.
Well, exactly, and that's the proof that so much of. You know, the right wing talks about, oh, you know, it's got to be capitalism.
And that's why.
But they're not doing capitalism, David.
And that's why the free market system fails, because they don't understand that. The guy at the top of the hill, if he doesn't sacrifice anything.
Well, you know what? We used the Ford model earlier.
Right.
Ford has bad sales. Ford closes plants. All right?
Right.
Well, some guy that welds the same spot on an automobile on an assembly line, and most of those are robots now, too, so that's a bad example.
Right.
But the guy that fits the door on the car.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that guy loses his job. His home gets foreclosed on. He loses his car. He goes on welfare. His kids can't eat right. their educational potential and their educational future goes down the toilet. Well, what happens to the chief executive at Ford? What happens to the upper tier executives? What happens to the plant manager when that plant closes? Well, none of that happens to him because he is already compensated. He doesn't share the risk of corporate failure that the worker does, and as a consequence, we cannot argue that that is in any way a part of what Adam Smith had in mind in The Wealth of Nations, because part of capitalism is the sharing out of the risk among a larger pool of people in order to make a stronger corporate entity.
And for that to change, Bob, that's why we're going to have to start hatcheting some lifestyles. Bring it down a notch. Bring a lot of CEOs down a notch, because if it doesn't, it's like a circular discussion. We just go around in circles. And then again, it's a distraction, and then we blame it on the con folk. We blame it on the poor people, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's that dude over there. Do you know he downloaded 15,000 songs? Jesus. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
David, we're pretty much licked. I got to roll out of here, but thank you.
Yeah, Bob.
You take it easy, my friend.
All right, later.
Bye now. It all does... It's not so much arguing in circles, is it? It's that everything seems to come back to a common point. You know, one of the reasons that right-wing radio succeeded the way it did was, A, it blocked out any other means of approaching the problem. It created only one solution. In other words, there's only one kind of radio out there. Therefore, you can only feel like you're part of success, part of a successful group, a winner, if you will, if you subscribe to the only thing out there. It's actually quite totalitarian. It's actually quite communist, if you want to get right. You know, it's no, not communist, Soviet. It's quite Soviet if you want to get down to it. You know, you can't win unless you're on our side, and our side's the only side to be on. Therefore, if you and you know, liberal, that's how that happens. And yet, at the same time, the people who were listening to that and falling for that garbage were the ones who were being duped and goated by the system they were being told was on their side, because the whole point of it was to tell a working stiff who had no business falling for conservative politics that it wasn't his fault, it was the others, it was those brown people. I wish I had another hour. I got a dozen things I'd like to go into with you. Lou Dobbs having a fit about these two thug border patrol agents that shot a guy in the back. No, he's unfairly prosecuted. They shot him in the back. He was unarmed. There's always tomorrow. But the point is, it is somebody's fault. It is some other's fault. But the other is not an other whose fault is based on the color of his skin or sexual orientation or failure to adhere to some religious creed or dogma. The other is a person who goes to work in a limousine every day and might as well be eating cream of baby soup for lunch for all they think of the working people who carry this country on their damn backs. Right? Yeah. Thanks, Agnes, for producing tonight. Thank you, John Fox, our engineer in Sydney, Australia. Gone, not forever, and not forgotten. God, we hope you get hooked up again soon. We miss you, brother. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk. That's no joke. Everything that happens on the horn happens because of Ben Birch and the White Rose Society, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional and fabulous conversation radio host, whose show is up next, I might add. Strictly Confidential is on the way. Thanks to the United Brotherhood of Carpenters, who helped us get the horn going, and by helping us found the horn, are helping us save the American dream while they build the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Station is causing quite a commotion for evening commuters. Con Ed spokesman said an operational problem caused high pressure pipes to burst and steam to shoot up like a geyser, ripping a large hole in the street and blowing out nearby windows. Authorities insist there is no terrorism involved. The wife of murdered Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl is suing the terrorists responsible for killing her husband. In a New York court, Marianne Pearl is seeking an unspecified amount of money from Pakistan's largest bank and 23 individuals. Iraq's top al-Qaeda chief was arrested in Mosul earlier this month. The U.S. command says during interrogation, Abu Saeed claimed Iraq's terrorists receive important direction from al-Qaeda leaders in other countries. Republican senators blocked Democratic senators' latest attempt to force a withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq despite an all-night debate. Republicans called the entire process political theater. The nuclear power plant damaged in Monday's earthquake in northwest Japan suffered more damage than was first announced by authorities. Dozens of problems were exposed to a shocked public yesterday, including the revelation that 50% more radioactive water spewed into the Sea of Japan than originally was reported. The plant is shut down indefinitely by order of the town's mayor, where the plant is located. Tokyo Electric is downplaying any danger. New cartography shows a fault line running directly beneath the reactor. The UN's nuclear watchdog agency confirmed today North Korea has shut down all five of their nuclear facilities. Inspectors want full dismantlement so that North Korea doesn't simply turn them back on. Rescuers are sifting through the wreckage of Brazil's worst air disaster after an Airbus 320 skidded off a slick runway last night in Sao Paulo. The jet slammed into a gas station and an airport building, killing all 186 aboard and at least 15 people on the ground. Two black boxes have been recovered. Late word is that the pilot tried to pull out of his landing on the very short, rain-soaked runway.